all the stories have been told. The king of days of old, but there's no England now. All the wars that were won or lost somehow don't seem to matter very much anymore. All the lies we were told, all the lies of the people running around their castles are burned. Our eyes see change, the inside, we're the same as we ever were.
Hello, this is William Fink, and this is the Christogenia European Fellowship Forum. Living on a thin line. All the lies we were told. Rule Britannia has been forgotten for vague illusions to Rothschild bankers. The ones who have really usurped the English heritage. I don't know the full extent of the damage which was done in the London riots. I know it was pretty bad. I've seen a lot of the pictures. I have a lot of the pictures on the Saxon Messenger website. David Cameron has attributed the cause of the recent London riots to a slow-motion moral collapse. Of course, he would never admit that it has anything to do with a slow absorption by England of all the world's riffraff. He then said, "We have been too unwilling for too long to talk about what is right and what is wrong." He still won't talk about what is right and what is wrong. He says, "We have too often avoided saying what needs to be said." Well, the British government has outlawed what needs to be said. They've made it illegal to talk about race. You can go to prison in Britain for talking publicly about race issues.
He says, we have too often avoided saying what needs to be said about everything from marriage to welfare to common courtesy. He avoids the racial issue entirely. Other public officials have spent the last few days blaming the riots on everything from racial inequality, so we have some public officials who at least mention race, to poverty, to cutbacks in governmental benefits and perceived failures, and the delivery of benefits in the growing welfare state that is contemporary England. And I quoted an odd source for that. I quoted Catholic Online, but they actually were pretty frank about it. Cameron recently pledged to turn around the lives of 120,000 of the most troubled families before the next election in Britain. I wonder how much money that's going to cost the British people. As if the leopard could be made to change its spots. What Cameron really means is that he will find a different way to once again expand the welfare state and to placate the aliens who we as a nation have allowed to possess our once magnificent cities. The rioters are from troubled families. They are disgruntled youths. They are angry teens. They're children without fathers. One of the most conservative publications, The Sovereign Independent, and this is online, has not mustered the courage to call them anything but useful idiots and to complain about the inevitable police state that naturally must arise in a nation that's populated with savages if any decent folk remain and still want to live and hold on to their property. To most of the British people, and especially to the politically correct politicians and the media, they are anything but what they really are. The perpetrators of the London riots are black. A brief survey of English riots, and this information is readily available on Wikipedia, leads us to note the St. Paul's riot in April of 1980 in Bristol, the Brixton riot of 1981, the 1981 Pox Death riots in Liverpool, the Moss Side riots in Manchester, the Chapeltown riot in Leeds, the first Handsworth riot in Birmingham, the Brixton riot in 1985, the second Handsworth riot in 1985, the Broadwater Farm riot in October of 1985, another Brixton riot in 1995, and a Manningham riot in June of 1995 in Bradford, West Yorkshire. Some of these riots occurred upon police involvement in the community, which is actually what kicked off the latest Tottenham riots. Police involvement in the community. Police shot a drug dealer that was shooting at them, and every Negro in the neighborhood riots. The media generally attributes all of this long list of riots throughout the 80s and 90s to unemployment, racial tension, and the alienation of black youth, as if they weren't aliens to begin with. All of these riots were perpetrated by blacks. Sure, there were occasions when some whites among the rioters are found. When blacks take over a district or a neighborhood, most whites flee for refuge to the suburbs or wherever they can flee to. But not all whites have the means to escape. Rather than the blacks assimilating and accepting white customs, laws, and habits, many of the whites left behind in those neighborhoods learn to accept the ways of the blacks, and the white children grow up to be virtually black. We call them Wiggers in America. Today, through the media attention given to the aliens, many of our young people, even in the suburbs, have learned to imitate the blacks. This is the same pattern that Yahweh told the Hebrews of the Old Testament not to let the Canaanites live among them, because the Hebrews, even though they were the majority culture, would follow the ways of the Canaanites. We have that same pattern here again. In white civilization, where people race to the bottom, where people adopt the ways
of the poorest sectors of society, or the, I should say, the lowliest sectors of society. Therefore, many whites, having so-called gangster rappers for role models, have learned to act in that method and to follow the Negroes. The aliens are not being raised to the former heights of British society. Rather, all British society is being pulled down to the level of the aliens. Society, the word, is familiarly regarded as a community of people living in a particular region, having shared customs, laws, and organizations. Things such as Sharia law and alien customs in Britain are not compatible with British society, and they are contrary to the actual definition of society itself. Man has never been successful at defying nature without first constructing massive artificial support systems and at great expense. Thus is the cost of diversity. The massive artificial support system that the modern Western states use to defy nature in multiculturalism is the welfare state. The welfare state is a massive artificial support system put in place to assist in man's endeavor to defy nature by mixing diverse species into the same living space. It doesn't work. And as we've seen in England just last week, when you remove the support system or components of it, which are the portions of the welfare state that the English are too broke to support any longer, when you remove parts of the support system, the society will collapse. The defiance of nature will no longer be possible. The animals are let loose from the cages. Mr. Cameron, in Britain today, can we really talk about what is right and what is wrong? No, we can't. We'll go to prison. Or has truly free speech not been abrogated by the demands of certain classes that are forcing us to accept multiculturalism and diversity? The Jewish ruling class, the banker class, has outlawed our being able to speak our minds so that they could oppress us and destroy us with these other races. It's very clear. We have allowed ourselves to be flooded with aliens because we didn't speak up when the time was neat, when we were still able. And there was no opposition because we were never allowed to discuss the true nature of our society down the road. Some people did try to speak out, and they were silenced. They were a minority, and when they were silenced, nobody defended them. Enoch Powell comes to mind. To this very day, we are browbeaten whenever race is mentioned. We are browbeaten whenever race is mentioned as a possible problem in society. Yet it should be abundantly clear that race is not a construct of society. Society is a construct of race. You can't mix oil and water. They will separate themselves. In reality, Mr. Cameron, the government has outlawed saying what needs to be said. All of your rhetoric is vain because you won't say what really needs to be said. You just refuse to. The blacks have never produced any society above what is found in Africa. It's not possible for them to do so. The proof of that is evident the world over. Just get right on the internet and look at pictures of Detroit or Cleveland or Newark, New Jersey, or Camden, New Jersey, or Baltimore, or Fort Wayne, Indiana, or Milwaukee, Wisconsin, after 50 years of black occupation. All of these cities are absolutely destroyed. white men did not go to Detroit and start ripping down buildings. Likewise, wherever the Arabs and related Muslims are found, and France today is the perfect example of this, it's inevitable, the result is Arabia, a desert devoid of recognizable culture. Racial inequality is a biological and natural fact, and we must learn from the results when we ignore that fact. We have allowed ourselves to be flooded with these people, and we have paid them food stamps and welfare and medical benefits to buy their peace, just like the Romans tried to buy the Goths. And 70 years later, the Goths came and destroyed Rome. Just like the Byzantines tried to buy the Huns. They spent their time trying to buy the Huns while the Arabs were consuming the rest of their lands. Once the benefits cease, the parasites naturally look to kill the host so that they can feed off whatever is left of its cadaver. This is England today. It's also America. Now, the only truly relevant question is this. When can Englishmen actually stand up for England? And to make an England, you have to have a nation of Angles. You can't make a nation of Angles. You can't make an Angleland out of Hutus and Tutsis and Somalians. It's not possible. If we don't stand up for our white lands, soon we will have nothing to stand for. There was an article yesterday in the Daily Mail. Immigration officer comes home to find family of Romanian, I'm sorry, they're not really Romanian, gypsies squatting in her house, wearing her clothes and drinking her wine, after telling her neighbors that she died. Yeah, you know, I have empathy for this woman, that her house is trashed. She comes home and she finds it full of these squat monsters. That these beasts, they trashed her house, they ate her food, they wore her clothes. But in a way, I don't feel sorry for her, because she's an immigration officer. And somehow I feel that maybe it's a case of you reap what you sow. Perhaps all the immigration officers should come home to houses full of squat monsters. Maybe the rest of the people in England should hang up signs in front of the homes of immigration officers and ministers of parliament and other government bureaucrats who have allowed the overrunning of England with aliens. Squat here. They should taste their own medicine. So in a way, I have empathy for this woman, but in a way, I can't have empathy for her, and I have to think that she reaps what she sowed. And this is a rare case of that today. We don't get to see enough of that because Yahweh is using this blindness and these aliens to punish the children of Israel for their sin. Okay, this is an open forum, and that's my opening remarks. Maybe somebody wants to talk about the riots, or somebody wants to talk about whatever else is going on in England. I mean, the Tottenham riots are enough, but there's a few other things going on. I know that. Or in Europe itself. I haven't had any news from the continent lately. I really haven't gone looking for it, but... Hello, Danny. Hello, Dorcas. Hello, Taya.
Hi there.
How are we doing? That article I just read is the Saxon Messenger editorial for this month. I titled it "The Beasts That Dwell Among Us." It could have easily been three or four times longer. I tried purposely to keep it brief.
Well, it's right on the mark, isn't it? Sums it all up very neatly. The Daily Mail last Sunday, Peter Hitchens is a very good writer. And he said the country formerly known as Great Britain at police water cannon and plastic bullets after 50 years of the most lavish welfare state on earth. What an abject failure. And then his article goes on to say the disenfranchised youth. And there was another man, Dr. Starsky, in the week, who was a historian who does do history programs on television. And he just made the comment that the white youth have gone black. And I absolutely went berserk. Whether he'll ever get put on television again, I have no idea. But they're clamped down on absolutely at the moment. They can't say a word. And a couple of days ago, I went into a hairdresser's. This shows you how stupid the English people are. On the desk, they were holding, they wanted money because they'd got somebody going to Borneo to help the orphans in Borneo. Now, how ridiculous it's all becoming, I can't tell you. But these Christian people, in quotes, they feel they've got to be extra nice to everybody. I mean, I've never heard of such a thing as a missionary going to Borneo to help children, you know, with no families.
What's worse, Dorcas, I think almost, is the Somalia thing that appears on television all the time, asking for money for these starving people, and yet it's a Marxist country, which is involved in piracy, people trafficking. We've had our own people held prisoner there for 18 months, haven't we? And yet people are offering to send money there.
No.
Which will only enable them to live long enough to get over here and, make a profession of the begging.
Absolutely. And if you see the palace that Mugabe lives in, it's more grander than Buckingham Palace. I know that's Kenya. But they're all living in sumptuous luxury, and they keep up. We've got soft hearts, that's all I can say. People can't bear to think, you know, someone's starving, but they don't think beyond that. They don't even know whether their money goes there.
And
We have all these things during the year, Save the Children, false relief, you never hear who runs, has the money, how it's distributed, and they keep coming back every year and they get millions every year.
When a Jew wants a job, he starts a charity, right?
And he knows that the English are soft.
Now, who was that Irish commentator you were talking about? Because I have an interesting thing which Tia sent me from the Irish Independent today, which doesn't really tell the truth about race, but it comes close. It draws a pretty good picture of what's happening in Africa with all this aid. And for instance, it explains that that this is from the Irish Independent. Africa is giving nothing to anyone apart from AIDS, the disease, which is absolutely true. Africa and Africans have never provided anything for anyone. They can't even provide themselves. They've been an economic and a social basket case for their entire tribal history. This has been going on for thousands of years before white involvement. Since England more or less resigned her empire over to the United Nations, this has been going on. The only cultivating force they've ever had in their history is those decades or in some cases centuries of British rule that they were blessed with, because only the white man can actually organize a society, and these people have been destroying each other, but because of their sexual concupiscence that they are able to multiply
in spite of the fact that they're destroying each other. And this one writer actually summed it up pretty well, where he says that Somalia is another fine land of violent Kalashnikov toting, cat chewing, girl circumcising, permanently tumescent, which is a reference to their sexual promiscuity, permanently tumescent layabouts. And if you take out Somalia and put in New York, and you take out Kalashnikov toting and replace it with Glock toting, cat chewing and replace it with crack smoking, you'll have the perfect description of the American Negro.
Mm, absolutely.
That's what they are.
Mm.
They organize in gangs and loot and pillage. And that's the only way they know how to make a living. And that's what they did in the jungles for 50,000 years. And that's what they do in our cities today. They only work for a living at honest jobs when they could sponge off a government job, which doesn't require anything from them, or when they're absolutely forced to labor.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, they're tribal people. They should have been left in deepest Africa until the Almighty came and sorted out his kingdom. I mean, they were tribal, and the tribe would run the little sections. They had no problems there. They just had to go out and hunt and gather. So they don't know what it is to have to work menial tasks. That's in their very genes.
Well, absolutely. And they don't know what it is to support to support a society. You have to care for one another.
Yes,
and edify one another and help the weak, and they don't understand any of that. They don't help their weak. They feed off them. And when the white man comes along and helps their weak, they feed off them again.
Yes. Well, at the moment, it's costing us here $1 billion a year in migrant housing. $1 billion.
Well, I wish I still had it. I might have it somewhere. I don't have it handy. There was an article in the Daily Mail 2 weeks ago, or maybe three, about a black sex offender. And because he was a Somalian immigrant, he couldn't be deported. And because he couldn't be deported, they had to support him. He's getting £1,000 a month from the English government.
I know.
I wish I could get £1,000 a month.
Yeah.
That's incredible. That's probably more than most Englishmen make.
Oh, absolutely. But some of the Somalis, because they've got large families, are having to be put up in very large houses. You could call them mansions. That is not an exaggeration. And it's costing something like £4,000 or £5,000 a month, or possibly even more.
Yes.
And it just is so stupid. You cannot believe that anybody can be so stupid with taxpayers' money.
No. Actually, a few years ago, we gave a well to a village in Africa, and they used to send out the civil servants when it was planting time. So our civil service, I had a friend in the civil service, and they used to send out people to start them off. Well, they put a well in this village, and it broke down. And nobody could mend it there, and service is not the same today, so they had no one trotting out there to put it right. So the well just went in disuse, and they're back to square one. I mean, it speaks for itself, isn't it, really? I don't know if it's all got beyond a joke. And if I say I'm not putting anything in the envelope when it passes me, they look at me in horror as though I'm the most awful creature. But when I saw Borneo, big red flags began to wave. Oh, dear. You have to laugh.
Well, this article from the Irish Independent explains that in the 1980s, we had, and Bob Geldof is some kind of American record producer or something. I'm sure he's a Jew, right? Had this famous Feed the World campaign,
Yes, yeah. It is.
And millions of dollars in food aid went to Ethiopia.
And the
population at that time was 33.5 million.
Yeah.
Now it's 78 million. And they still can't feed themselves.
So now
they have twice as many people, or two and a half times as many people, that they can't feed.
No. Absolutely. And you know,
because we keep sending aid.
Yes.
Well, right. And if we didn't send any aid, they'd all starve to death in 6 months, and the world would be better off.
Problem solved.
And Prince Charles got in on the act yesterday. He went to Croydon, which I know very well. It's the next town to London, within reach of London. And I used to live in Croydon, and he went, and it's full of Asians. It's as though Asia lives in Croydon now. And he made the comment that the young people riot because they haven't got families. They join these gangs, so they all become part of the family. It was awful. Just awful. I expect he felt he had to do something and say something. But he said nothing.
Yeah. Well, what we get as white people letting these people into our lands. I remember seeing video or film, the news clippings and newsreels about the Caribbean blacks coming into England and how they wanted to just become English live in peace and follow their religion and all this kind of stuff, and then they turn around and now their grandchildren are burning the British towns down to death the English people.
Like, well, if there was any justice in the world, Prince Charles would be wearing a ski mask in Tottenham to hide from the masses of white people with pitchforks marching on Westminster Abbey.
Yes, absolutely. In 1947, when the first Caribbean immigrant came to England, after the war, they said the man hour was very short. And my brother-in-law, he was a bus driver. He'd come out of the Navy, and they were very concerned about these black people being told to come in to take their jobs. I mean, that was his argument, and he was right, because we'd lost all our men in the war, so they was asking all the Caribbeans to come in. That was the start of it in 1947.
Right. Right, yeah. I remember seeing that. They're showing their appreciation now, aren't they?
They are indeed.
It's just like the Americans, what we went through when we went through with the Watts riots and all this kind of stuff. And what I have to say, I remember, I was young then, but I remember Martin Luther King coming into Los Angeles the latter part of July of 1965, and I remember he got all the blacks all stirred up, and then as soon as he left, the riots started, and they rioted there for over a week, almost 2 weeks. They had to bring the National Guard in.
Yeah.
Back then, you know, they had the Black Panther Party, and they were saying how they were going to, they put these maps out and on the news how they were going to come into the white areas and get whitey and everything. They never got past the railroad tracks in Alameda because the white boys were waiting for them.
Wow.
So that's all different now there in Los Angeles, because it's, you know, it's so been flooded with the Mexicans and the South Americans and blacks, but.
Yes, but do you know, Danny, we had some vigilantes. We had some white youth wanted to stand up to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we don't want vigilantes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's awful not allowing your own people to protect things in your country. It's awful.
Well, you know, the English, from what I see, also, the English are so much like the Americans. Americans like the English. They're so slow to react, to get angry about anything. And plus, you know, we have the media, so much propaganda coming out of the media the way they do. For instance, speaking with a man yesterday, this guy came to do some painting at our house. He was a Catholic, Irish Catholic, and what you would call a Republican. And I started talking to him about the Christian identity message. And you know, the first thing that came out of his mouth was, well, what about all the other races? What about the black people? And I remember the white people have been so brainwashed and conditioned to worry about all these other races, and they don't worry about themselves, their own race being, genocide being committed against us. And all he worried about, well, what about the black man getting to heaven and everything like that? And I said, does that really concern you? Are you really worried about that? You know, because this is the way that the churches and the media and you know, we have an awful lot to go up against, especially with our beliefs and things like that. So,
but black-on-white crime here is always played down, and it's only when it's the other way around that attention's drawn to it ad nauseum.
Absolutely.
In fact, they go to great lengths to prevent you from knowing even sometimes the name of the black, because you would possibly guess his ethnicity by the name. So they go to tremendous lengths to cover up that, you know, what's happening. So
they don't mention it on the
name. People aren't as aware as perhaps they might otherwise be.
No, absolutely not. It's just buried.
And also, when you mentioned about those people from the Caribbean coming in back in the was it late 40s?
40s.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, I remember reading about this and listening to the people. Our own children were taken to Australia to be adopted in the thousands. The country was so poor, and the poor whites were thinking that they were sending their children to be adopted over there to a better life. And in actual fact, they were sent to children's homes, they were abused, they were treated like white slaves. And this was a two-way thing happening all at the same time, you know, when we look back. And I've actually heard that these people who are now in their, late 60s, early 70s, probably early 70s, you know, they were even told that their parents were dead.
Yes. They've made a film about it, haven't they, as well?
Yes. But there was the export of these children at the same time that these others are being brought in.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the plan was there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think I posted, I don't know if I posted on the internet, about the program of the 1952 Jewish Congress when they convened and talking about their plan of integration of the black race. Well, I even went back, I think it was 1912, I think I'm pretty sure that I said it. But they said that they were going to do all this, you know, they were going to raise the black man up within our midst.
They said,
and be sports heroes, and they'll be in Hollywood, they'll be in the media, they'll be in the movies, and raise them up to the level of the white man, and then into the beds with the white women to destroy our enemy forever, they said, the white Christian people.
Yeah.
The Jews. So we have to expect it. I mean, this is a war. People don't understand we are in a war. There was a war in heaven, now there's an earth. And we're part of it. And a big part of that war is psychological.
It's
not only racial, it's psychological.
Absolutely. But do you think in the Israel people, there is this tendency of looking after things and looking after people? It's all part of the genetic makeup of the individual, isn't it? And that's what they're playing on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our empathy, when it's employed outside of the covenants and the will of God, always leads to our destruction.
Right.
Yes. And that's what's happening.
That's why the Word of God has to be foremost in our thoughts and our minds, and then our empathy would be directly, what would be correctly
yes.
directed.
Yes.
But the truth of the covenants of God have been taken out of the minds of the people altogether.
Right. Yes.
So it's like empathy without a compass, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and from what I understand, like in Germany and the nations on the air, that God is absolutely removed from society altogether. That is very mostly Antichrist. In those countries, they've stopped that. They just don't. They don't teach it.
But Germany's still not really is it. So.
Right.
Well, do you know the program Sesame Street? It's an American program for young children. Well, they've just had a big debate that they want to put a homosexual couple in Sesame Street to teach the toddlers about homosexuality.
Yes.
And fortunately, it didn't go through. But I mean, it's how dreadful it all is. So that's another phase. And children are being indoctrinated through these Disney films.
Well, it's the pro-deviant lobby, the sexually deviant lobby that has been pushing the producers of Sesame Street to make Bert and Ernie a homosexual couple.
Yes, that's right.
And fortunately, and I don't know how long you'll hold out like this, that the producers of Sesame Street have taken the safe road by trying to explain that Bert and Ernie are puppets and they don't have sex, right? but the sexual deviants just don't get it.
No. So they're trying to destroy the moral tone of all these.
Well, that's been their plan all along. Pretty soon, you're going to see a push for the legalization of sex with children. That's the next step. Once they get this whole sexually deviant marriage scheme, passed everywhere, and man and Adam and Steve are legalized, right? Well, once they get that done, then they're going to start on our children openly. And the Catholic Church, the Pope has already said, and I have this article somewhere, that it's normal to have sex with children. And that it's been done for thousands of years. The Catholic Pope came out and said this openly last year. But it didn't get a whole lot of play in the media.
I don't
believe
that. He's trying to legitimize, and that's the beginning of it. And once the church is willing to go along with it, and once they get this gay marriage thing passed, they're going to start on the children.
No doubt. That was an interesting article I read there. Who was it? That little Jew, he was a young child actor, Corey Feldman. And I think it was in the Daily Mail or one of those magazines, British magazines. But he was explaining how pedophiles are all through Hollywood. And he was raised around all these pedophiles.
All I have to say is this. Are Jews all through Hollywood?
They're all pedophiles. He said it was nothing but pedophiles.
Every Jew is a pedophile.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How could
and he's a little Jew, too. He's a crank himself. And he was admitting to this.
Yeah, you know, this religion, the religious leaders of the Jews suck little boys' penises and justify it.
Yeah, circumcision, they call it circumcising. And
that is absolutely repulsive, disgusting, and anti-biblical.
Yeah,
but when your religious leaders can justify sucking the blood off of little boys' penises, there are no boundaries.
Exactly, yeah. You're right. you can't stop that.
And that's the thinking of these people. It's the ancient Canaanites all over again, right? It's Sodom and Gomorrah. Whenever you see a Jew, you're looking at a portable Sodom and Gomorrah implement.
Yeah.
That's what they are.
Yeah.
You know, and watching Israeli TV and everything like that, they have no, there's no morals there either. That one video that you have there showing that young woman have Christ as an ape or a monkey, and she's putting nails in him and everything like that, crucified.
And she's dressed like a whore, right?
Yeah, right. She's just exactly what I was going to say. She looked like a hooker. And this was supposed to be a young children's, I guess, program.
Well, I've had much worse videos than that that I wouldn't even post.
I mean, that I saw. It was on YouTube or something. But, they don't have any. There's no low or high. They just, they have whatever feels good, do it. That type of attitude. And then that's why they're destroyed. You know, the second chapter, or second Peter, second verse 12, it speaks about the irrational, natural, rational animals and destruction and corruption. And they, you know, that sound is just like these people and just like those, you know, like brute beasts that these people are, that they just come on and corrupt everything. They get involved and they just corrupt everything and destroy everything.
Yeah.
Like that gentleman that was beat to death over there during the riots last week. I noticed on the internet, on the media, never mentioned the fact that it was a black that did it, or a nigger that did it. I call him a nigger because he's nothing but a nigger. He's a scum. And he was. They were gonna provide psychological help for him too, because he was only 16. Beat to death the 68-year-old man who's trying to put out some fire or something like that.
And let me tell you something. He'll be a hero in prison.
Yes.
They'll take care of him in prison.
Well, they interviewed five of the niggers there that were robbing everything, Bill. They had it right on TV here. And they were bragging about how much money they were going to make off of the flat-screen TVs that they got for free and how they went around. Piled up the car full of stuff, left, and came back.
Wow.
Filled it up again, they came back, and they were just
bragging. Well, right. That's what it's really about. It's about looting and pillaging.
You know? Because because the whites, you know, the British have been so aggressive against them and not fair and discriminating against them and everything like that. And this is what happens. This is what we're supposed to get. We deserve for the treatment of the poor blacks.
I put a short note up on the on the Saxon Messenger. Are they disgruntled or are they thieves? And it has a picture of a bunch of Negroes in London raiding, looting a shop. I wrote real simple that when America was besieged by race riots in the 60s, the Negroes looted all of the shops. During the riots of the 1980s in Britain, the Negroes looted all of the shops. When Rodney King was beaten in Los Angeles, the Negroes looted all of the shops. When Hurricane Katrina hit the city of New Orleans, the Negroes looted all of the shops.
And in
it's all about looting the shops. That's all they want to do.
They looted the shops.
Now, during these latest London riots, the Negroes looted all of the shops.
Exactly.
Are they really an oppressed and disaffected citizenry, or are they only looters pillaging whatever they could steal?
Well, of course they were oppressed because they didn't have nice cars to haul all that stuff out.
Well, right. The Negro believes he's oppressed when you don't give him $1 million, a mansion, and your daughter. And if you give him $1 million, a mansion, and your daughter, he'll still think of a way to whine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Never going to make him happy, ever.
Ezekiel 16:25, speaking about the children in the dispersion of Israel, thou hast built thy high place at every head of the way. That's the temples we like to set up to everything but Yahweh, right? And thou hast made thy beauty to be abhorred, and hast opened thy feet to everyone that passed by. That means spread thy legs, right? That's what that means. And multiplied thy whoredoms. And that's what we do. Whenever we assist these other races at the detriment or cost to our own people, we are spreading our legs and multiplying our whoredoms to all these other races, because Yahweh is not their God.
That's a harsh way to put it, but that's true.
Well, that's Ezekiel. That's what it says.
That's it.
That's what openeth thy feet means.
Well,
they were just trying to put it nicely in the I guess they didn't have the same quite the same language that we have today in 1611.
Well, in the 40s, they're still dishing out as punishment the birch in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really punished, and schools were extremely strict with the cane. And obedience. So,
yes.
So the 40s, I think it's the advent of having television in one's home that started the real rot, and all the 60s, of course, so everyone had to love each other. But, I mean, how can we come from the 40s when the birch was still being applied, and strict schoolmasters. I was in a mixed class school, and some boys used to try and show off, you know, how big, and we used to witness them having the cane.
Mm-hmm.
It used to make you wince.
Well, I was right on the cusp of that when I was a child, right? But because until 1970, I went to a Catholic school that had all nuns.
Yeah.
And I had this sister, Helen Victoria, and what a pain in the butt she was. And I would never hold my pencil correctly. And I still don't.
Mm-hmm.
When I write, I don't hold my pen or my pencil the way the nuns insisted I should.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to get whacked across the hand with the pointer. She'd sneak up on me while I was writing and whack me across the hand with the pointer. Because I wasn't holding my pencil correctly. Today, kids would bring a gun to school and shoot her. And in 1970, the following year, my parents had moved across town to a Catholic school. They put us in another Catholic school across town, and we moved to escape the onslaught of Negroes. And my parents put us in a Catholic school, but they had no nuns. They had all lay teachers, you know, civilian teachers. And all of these teachers, this school had just gotten rid of its nuns a year or two before I started there. And all of the teachers were new, and they were all young and just out of college, and they were all hippies. That they were all the liberal hippie types. They rode around in Volkswagens, and they wore these long hippie dresses, and they were all hippies, and it was a horrible place. I couldn't stand them. I didn't like them when I was in fifth grade. And everything was really liberal, and there was no discipline, and it was crazy. It was a night and day from the first school I went to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember watching about that in Boston and everything, when they were integrating the busing. In Boston, I remember people of Boston really holding or fighting the busing. of the children, and they were really, really raising a lot of heck there, fighting against them, and then all of a sudden, that was it. They just went along with it.
Right, I remember the busing fights in the early 70s in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And some towns in Jersey, but mostly in Boston. And that was about 1973, 74 maybe. Mm-hmm. And that was a Republican president, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that Americans don't see, is that generally the Republicans have been much more patronizing to the minorities in this country than the Democrats have been, even though the Democratic Party in this country is seen as the party that caters to the minorities, and most minorities mm-hmm. always vote Democratic. But Republicans, mm-hmm. I mean, Dwight Eisenhower was the president that sent the National Guard into Alabama, that you know, Brown versus the Board of Education, mm-hmm. desegregation of the schools. That was Dwight Eisenhower. That was the beginning of the civil rights movement. It was in his administration,
right?
And he catered to them. And Richard Nixon was affirmative action and equal opportunity. That was Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
Those agencies and things were created while he was president.
Yeah, and that was about the time in the early 50s, I remember reading about that, what was it, the Jewish Congress, you know, declaring how they were going to integrate.
Well, right, it all happened. So that's the proof that the Jewish Congress happened.
Yeah. That's the proof
it all came through.
So, I don't know, we're sure living in some strange times now. Everything right is wrong, everything wrong is right.
1984.
Yes. Here, at the moment, the judges are supporting this influx of criminal, illegal aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And when we try and deport them, and there was a guy this week, he's been deported twice, so he was here again illegally, and the judge gave him deliberately an 11-month sentence instead of a 12-month sentence, because 12 months would have meant that he was deported. And he actually said, I am reducing your sentence by a month so that you will not be kicked out. And that's just incredible. And he was a drug dealer, as well as an illegal immigrant.
Well, that one beast over there that was killed, that in those riots there, found out that he had a criminal record a mile long, and he had a couple babies there, and he had this other woman pregnant, and he just was caught cheating on his one girlfriend. So I wonder really who shot him. He had a record a mile long, I was reading. So a lot of them all do. That's what I remember. That was
it's
the big thing.
Style.
Yeah, I remember that was the big thing. And Bill and any other Americans on the post there, they'll know that that's when the blacks used to get all their. It was like Christmas for them whenever they had a riot. You know, it was the time that they, that was the time that they looted. And it was like accepted.
Wow. I wonder what the end is going to be. I mean, if it's going downhill, when will it cease?
Well, at the moment, we have the largest population increase throughout the whole of the European Union. Apparently, our birth rate increased on top of normal by 409 last year. And France has something like 350, Italy 286, and those are the sort of figures. And, a tiny little island like this cannot sustain that kind of population growth.
Oh, I know. Yeah, that's this whole thing. See, in America, you can move away, you can at least move away maybe and to a safe place if you can. But over here, that's what I tell my wife, that what bothers me now is you see, like every time you look down the street or something here now, you see a dark face. It's just unbelievable how fast they integrated Northern Ireland, or they're integrating the place. I have never seen anything like it. I mean, this time last year, it was nothing like this. And now, everywhere you go, everywhere you look, you see a brown face. So that means they're just absolutely pouring, just pouring in this place.
Danny, what about Southern Ireland? Are they being overrun?
Oh, they are, yes.
How are they?
Oh, they're having a bad time.
They're more
in
the EU.
Yeah.
Oh, of course they are.
Like I said, they brought families, ladies. They brought black families from the Congo, from Nigeria, Somalia, and placed these families, at least 4 or 5 families, in every city and little town through Ireland, Republic of Ireland, city.
And according to EU law, the only way you could live on this island or in Ireland would be on a raft. Because you have to seek asylum at the first country you come to in the European Union, which is usually, if you're looking from Africa, North Africa, it's usually Greece or Italy or one of those countries.
They're
overwhelmed, so they funnel them through the rest of Europe, and France can't wait to get rid of them across the Channel into Britain.
They
can't possibly be arriving here legally.
No.
It bothers me because you don't have any way when they get at least 20% of any population or in their towns and stuff, when you start them hanging out on the corners and stuff like that, and that's when you're going to have the trouble. That's when the young girls, that's what I was telling this gentleman yesterday, was painting my place here. Real nice man and everything. Catholic guy, and I told him, this is what you're going to see, and this is going to happen. The first thing that's going to happen is the young girls are going to be attacked, and they're going to be raped here. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens to these people, because over here in the north, they're a different type of people, these people, whether they're the Republican or Loyalist or British or whatever. They usually settle their problems by themselves here. They don't go to
police. Yes, they do.
And that kind of stuff. So it's going to be...
Oh, they've always had us, haven't they?
Yes. And
which does help.
It's going to be... I just wonder what's going to happen. Because it's going to happen. Because I've seen these Indians and these Pakis and stuff, and they just... They look like they're raping the women with their eyes. These young girls walking around here, and they walk like right behind them and everything.
They do have a reputation grooming them, don't they?
Yes. And like I said, there was a few weeks ago, I asked these young girls, are you all right? There was this couple there, these two Indians, they were just dark as coal. They look like satanic beings walking. And I asked these girls, are you all right? Are they saying? And she said, yeah, that's okay. And, but... I don't know. That's what I see. It's going to happen. I've seen it before, and they do have their pattern.
Yeah.
But people over here don't seem to be bothered with it, because I've never had a brown man try to kill me. That's what they tell you. Whether they're whether they're the Republican, Irish, British, Loyalist. I always hear this. I've never had a brown and kill me. I've only been killed by white men.
Wow.
You're so cold. And I said, well, you'll find out.
When they're in the minority, they behave differently from when they're growing in.
Yes.
You wait till you get a few of them over here, then they're going to start. Because they would say something now. They'd like to say something now, but they just still a little, they're a little fearful here. You watch them on the streets, but they're by themselves now, still looking over their shoulders and stuff. That's good. Believe me, if you could keep these blacks and stuff like that, scared like that, you'll be in their place. When they know that they can become more aggressive, then you're going to have trouble.
It's amazing, really, that, you know, the books that came out in the 30s and 40s, Brave New World and 1984. In Brave New World, it told about society. They were going to have a happy pill, and there was sex on demand, so everyone was happy. But they never brought the black element in those novels, in either novel. So that, to me, is surprising that they didn't know the whole plan of, so that is a development that they didn't write about, unless they couldn't write about it. Because I think those authors were instigated to set the scene, you know, what was to come.
Queen herself. I have her opinions about all this when she sees these acts and stuff. And I wonder if she realizes what's really going on and just doesn't say anything.
Well,
I'm sure she knows the throne she sits on is the throne of David, and I'm pretty sure she.
Yes.
Her great grandmother.
Yes. The trouble is, she used to have to sit and look at all these black dancers when she visited Africa, when we had the empire, and that now we've got the Cromwell. So she possibly feels she can't say against anything black because they were all her people. She was ruling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that is for India as well. I mean,
Indians didn't want the British to own India when them were being around them, but yet they want to come here and demand all their rights here.
I know. I know. They're having all their illusions now, aren't they?
Oh, they're in their glory.
Yeah. Someone said
that's not nice enough to call them Packies.
Oh.
That's supposed to be.
I like Packies because it infers that they should get the hell packing.
Oh, dear.
Name in England. Packy. Packy by Packy.
Yeah.
They should all be called Packies.
But I understand that that's supposed to be a hate crime.
Oh, is that?
Or something. You're supposed to. Pakistani. Like the P word now. Don't say the P word. You know, don't say the N word. Don't the J word. But yet you have freedom of speech, huh?
Well, we'll just make them piggers.
Yeah.
That'll work.
It's almost comical. And,
Well, that's the whole gist of, The George Orwell books that political correctness to the point of absurdity, and it all became doublespeak and that's what he was trying to that's exactly what's happening is what he was trying to describe.
Yes, it is.
Government approved language.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you know the Ravens were just laughing. Just laughing like the hell. All the white people take this. Well, it's not in there. But.
Well, it's going to end sooner or later. And we know how it's going to end. It's just a matter of time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And they are worried about the relative freedom of the internet. It's a wonderful way of us communicating and keeping up to date.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. And we're getting it out there.
Time.
Yeah.
And I try one important point that I had to make this week that I tried to make. I made it on the Saturday program was that we don't have to compromise our message to get it out there, right?
True.
That's a false assumption. And it's sad, and it's actually very sad that anybody would feel that way. If you stand fast in the truth, eventually it will be brought to light. That the I'm not really trying to boast a little bit, but Rents.com put a link on his front page. It's still there to that article, The Right Foreign Foe, on the Saxon Messenger site. And nearly 1,700 people this week came to the Saxon Messenger site from Rents.com to click that link, right?
Wow, that's incredible. The
program I did yesterday with Deanna Spignola on Republic Radio, I'm sure it'll get some good remarks, right? Well, that over 100 people came from her page to Christogenia and saw Christogenia through her page yesterday alone. So we don't have to compromise ourselves to get the message out there. Well, we don't have to appeal to the British Israel crowd and mainstream Christians to get the truth out. Well, we don't have to bend over backwards to placate the other races by telling them they'll go back to Mexico, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And it feels about that, too, you know? It feels good that that you can just be honest. To me, myself, it feels so much...
Well, as long as we keep it scholarly and academic, we can reach people.
Mm-hmm. How do the other races take it when we say that this is all they have in this life? Do you know something?
I have a whole lot of experience up close and personal with Negroes and Mexicans and Chinamen,
right.
And if you offer the other races anything but complete equality and a ticket to everything that you have, they're going to hate you. It doesn't matter where you want to draw the line. As soon as you draw a line, the other races hate you. And that's what idiots like Eli James and Ted Wieland, they don't understand. Okay? But I've lived it. And as soon as you draw a line, as soon as you make one shade of distinction, they will hate you.
Right.
Wow.
Well,
but the other races know that they are different, don't they?
Absolutely. And they despise you for it. They despise you for who you are. They are resentful. And as soon as you indicate to them anything other but 100% total acceptance...
Mm-hmm.
Then they're going to hate you.
Uh-huh.
And there's no getting around that. That's why Ted Wieland says, oh, you could be a racialist without being a racialist. A racist. Well, that's a lie. No, you can't. Because the other races are still going to hate you. Being implicitly white is not enough. The only defense that we have for preservation of our race is to be explicitly white. Period.
Yes, you're exactly. I've worked and lived around them too. Went to school with them, and you know, and not by choice, but it just happened that way. You're exactly right.
Well, they hate you. As soon as you make one little distinction, they hate you because they don't understand it.
Right. But yet they can. Now I had a black, an old black guy, southern black. He was from Louisiana, and he said to me right in front of everybody too at work. We were having lunch, and he said that you know, you're a nice guy and all that, Danny, but I would never want you to marry a black daughter.
Wow.
He said to me, and I said, you know, you're probably one of the smartest black men I think I've ever met, because I agree. I agree with a race of people. And when I said that, the first thing he said was, you know, what, are you a racist? But he just got telling me that I couldn't marry his daughter because she's white.
And well, it's okay for him. But it's not okay for you because he wants your daughter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They, you know, and I don't know, Bill will probably back me up on this one, but being around them, that's all they talk about, black men. All they talk about is white women. And
yes, absolutely.
That is it. They just talk about sex, you know, and then especially when you got over there, they have a white woman going.
I walked up, this is a true story, of course, all my stories are true, but and I got a million of them. I walked up behind this 450-pound black dude one day. He was the fattest dude in the unit, and they called him Buddy Love. That was his nickname. Well, he was looking at a porno magazine, and he lived about two doors down from me in this dormitory, and he was looking at a porno magazine with four or five other black guys. And he made the exclamation as I was approaching this group, you know, because I had to walk through them to get to my living quarters. He was making the exclamation that he'd rather see five black girls get their heads cut off than one white girl get a hangnail. And he made that exclamation because he was worshiping this girl in this porno magazine that he was looking at. And I looked at him, and he made this exclamation as I was passing through this group. And I looked at him, and I said, "You must hate your mother." And I just kept walking. And there was silence. And I don't think they got what I said, right? But that's what he said, and that was my response. "You must hate your mother." And it's true.
That is incredible, isn't it?
That's their attitude. That they sit around all day in prison waiting to debauch a white woman. That's their goal in life. And the more white women they debauch, and they drool over them. And they for 20 years, they sit in a prison cell drooling over the opportunity of getting themselves a white woman.
Mm-hmm.
And in the prison visiting halls, you'll see 50-year-old, 250-pound white women coming to visit 20-year-old blacks, 30-year-old blacks.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And they'll spend when they're out, they'll spend every penny on that white woman. Spend every penny on them.
Well, usually it's the other way around. The white women today are spending every penny on them because they weigh 250, 300 pounds. They can't find a suitable white mate because they've been filling their faces with Twinkies and soda pops for 40 years. And their husbands have left them or whatever because they're... And I'm not saying that we don't have a lot of slothful men, but middle-aged white women with young blacks.
Yeah.
Constantly. All the time.
They absolutely love those white
women. Wow. Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yep. They're just full of love. I just want to spread myself around.
Sending them money and pampering them, and it's disgusting.
One guy, he was a Christian, even, you know, Christian, black Christian guy, real clean cut, didn't drink or smoke or anything like that. And I worked with him for about 2 or 3 years, and I found out that he had he was married to a black woman, but he had a big, heavy set white woman on the side there that he used to go out with. That he don't know. I mean, he had her for years. I mean, I said, "Is your white your wife?" She said, "No." I said, "I just like a little cream in my coffee." See, a little cream in my coffee. And it was like
he's bragging that he has a trophy. And she feels wanted. And she has a pet.
Yeah, I just, I've seen that before. Southern California is crazy.
Well, whenever you see a white woman with a non-white man, you know that she is a trophy of conquest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Boy, oh boy, I'll tell you, when you get done with them, and you find your daughter chopped up in pieces in a plastic bag in a dumpster. They're known for that, too, which is awful. It's really bad. It's really dangerous when you got these people, when they get in big groups and numbers and stuff, which are white women. because they absolutely butcher. They'll butcher those women. You know, if the girls don't go along when everything is in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. They don't take no for an answer either, do they?
No. And that's the thing they always say. Well, you don't want to be with me because I'm black, right? And I said,
yeah. Yeah. How awful come to this stage.
Yeah, and who is behind it all? Who would want to push people into this type of situations and everything like that? If they just will leave everybody alone, everybody will filter on out to their own people, their culture, their own heritage, and there wouldn't be any problem. But when you got people like Rose Spector and Anita Kahane that says, you know, we're going to make you multicultural, and this is what you got to expect.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still amazed that those come out with videos like that, put it right on video, which is good.
Well, let's hope it finishes soon, because I've got grandchildren, great-grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Say, we pray, but we don't know today, right? I mean, that's the way it has to be.
Yeah. Hey, any of you people close to those riots? Last week?
No, I'm in Lombok. There was nothing where I live.
Yeah.
No, no.
Where was that? It was down by Manchester, wasn't it? Close to Manchester in Tottenham.
Birmingham.
Birmingham.
Yeah.
Well, Birmingham was noted to be a black town, right? Birmingham and Leeds.
But they're more Asian, I would have said.
Uh-huh.
You know, less all those places, the more Asian.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
So the southern parts were more black, but the ones in London were around there.
Was that Liverpool? Was there riots in Liverpool?
Taya, when you say Asian, you mean Pakistani too, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, predominantly.
Oh, right.
Yeah. See, we don't really use that term for Pakistanis and Indians here for some reason.
Right, yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Asian to us is a Chinaman.
I meant predominantly Pakistani. Because the Indians are much smaller percentage.
Yeah, we usually lump, from my experience, Americans usually lump Indians and Pakistanis and...
Yes.
All under the term Indian, right? Or dothead, whatever. Even though there's a slight distinguishment there. It's a cultural distinguishment, not a racial one.
Yeah.
Racially, there's no real difference between Pakistanis and Indians.
No. But I noticed,
it's all the same sewer.
The ones they have over here, are very well dressed. And, most of them drive and they have nice cars.
Yeah, well, that's the vanguard. And next they'll flood in the taxi drivers and the 7-Eleven clerks.
Yeah. There's already one working over here at the shop around the corner, and I said to the owner, I said, you see that packy guy you got working in? And he just looked at me. I said, he's going to own your shop one of these days.
As soon as he gets that government loan.
He said, you think so? I said, yeah, he's going to own this place one day.
I would say here, virtually all of the corner shops are
it's amazing.
Owned by Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
It was like that in New Jersey in the 80s.
Yeah, they're none of the mom-papa things left. They're all now Pakistani.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're the ones who choose to work 7 days a week.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and all hours.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And they end up running the shops. You know, it's like a Jew. You hire any Jews in your company, they'll end up, if your company's any type of got any type of prosperity, they will end up owning it. They just know how to do that. In other words, there's just centuries and centuries, and they brag about it in their writing and stuff, in the Talmud and stuff like that, how to, you know, how to take these things off the goyim. It was mentioned in that book too, The Jews Must Live, by Samuel Roth. He talks about it. Of course, that book wasn't to be read by white people or Christians, but he mentions in there that it's a talent the Jew has of ripping off the Gentile, as they said, to the goyim.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a Jew rang into the program yesterday when Bill was on with the
Army. Yeah, that was good.
And it was so obvious, wasn't it, what he was
David.
Up to.
David! David from San Francisco.
What was it?
David in San Francisco, that's all I had to hear.
Hey, you know, Bill, that was... I had to... say to my wife, God, that Bill, he and I have a lot, and we think the same, because when he started out the program, and I was thinking to my wife, I said, I hope he starts in about the Talmud, connected with that connection with the Talmud, and exposing the Talmud, and one of the reasons was Hitler and them, but they noticed the Jews because of Talmudic teachings and stuff. And it was amazing, Bill. You sit in and you start talking about the Talmud and that the Joanne, or what's her name?
Deanna.
Right, Deanna. She just kept quiet and let you speak about it without interrupting her. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, she was very gracious. She was a good host. I think I didn't say too much that was disagreeable to her. I mean, I think I said some things that caught her by surprise about, you know, the exclusivity of Christianity and things like that. But
yes.
For the most part, I wasn't really disagreeable to her. I mean, she knew that I was telling the truth. She was familiar evidently with a lot of what I had to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell me, what happened during the breaks?
Nothing. I didn't talk to her during the breaks like I talked to Giuliani. That's because she never said anything, so I don't even know if she could hear me during the breaks, right? I mean, I don't know how Republic mm-hmm. works. You know, I was quiet during the Giuliani breaks, but he started talking to me. And that's when mm-hmm. I realized that, you know, we could banter back and forth during the breaks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I won't speak unless I'm spoken to, right?
Yeah.
You don't believe
yeah,
that, do you?
Well
yeah. And that one calling, and he didn't understand about the Judean. You know, you had to explain that to him. But that's kind of good. Because there's a lot of listeners out there that are new to the message. So you're teaching them. Explaining things you probably never heard. Like this gentleman we had faint in our place here. He never realized that there was a difference between Jew and Judean.
No.
And that's another thing, being on these grams like that. You get that, those other people in the audience that are... you teach them too. Geez, I didn't know that, you know.
I was just happy to be able to get some of my little clips in, hoping that they make people think, right?
Right.
You know, that's the stuff that people remember, right? It's sad, but it's true.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Barack Obama with his one-liners. He became president through his one-liners.
Who's that?
Barack Obama, when he said, yes, we can, and people remember this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, people do remember silly one-liners. That's why I try to come up with
them.
Right.
I know.
It's propaganda. It serves as good propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And if you think about it, well, Yeah, you know, if Jesus was a Jew, he'd have been doing stand-up instead of parables. It sounds silly, but what do Jews do? They do stand-up comedy, and everything they say is immoral. What did Christ do? He did philosophically moral parables, and they all taught a lesson in morality. So is that Jewish? Well, it's contrary to what all the Jews have always done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, if he was a Jew, he would have had other white people running everybody out of the temple, and then he would have opened up a stand with discount prices.
Yeah, right. That's another good one. Right, exactly.
He would have sell them all. Like you say, you were getting into the information and everything, and then here comes a commercial.
Yeah, it's hard to deal with all the commercials. It's there's a ton of them. It's you can't really get into anything deep. It's all that you're scratching the surface, and once the banter is out of the way, well, it's commercial time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what do you think about the question and answers? Do you like the question and answers, or would you prefer just talking?
Well, that don't matter to me one way or another. I don't think that I'm an interviewer, right? I just don't. I don't have an interest in what anybody else has to say. I'm arrogant, right? I'm not a good interviewer. But I don't care if somebody can ask the right questions. I mean, quite often people like Deanna ask questions that you wouldn't expect, and they bring good results, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, they just think about things from an angle that you're not thinking about. So sometimes that works to your advantage. The important thing is to be instant in the scripture, right? To have an answer.
Yeah.
And a good answer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a gift, that is. That is a gift. You've been given a gift.
Yeah, it's...
Well, I think I screw up a lot, so... I always think that there's something better I could have said, but that's all
right. Right, yeah, we don't... And I think it's even worse or on TV or something. You know, you're being interviewed like one of those talk shows or something, but I thought you did really well. It's just nice to hear the truth coming over, whether it's the internet or on TV. It seems like your ears just perk up when you hear somebody talking the truth and something that's right that you just don't hear. It's almost like a spiritual food that you know.
Yes, it is.
And
we'll see how much reciprocal traffic there is, and whether she invites me back, right?
Mhm.
Yeah.
Mhm. Yeah, so we're hoping the times that Rick Adams too. He has a pretty good, pretty big following too on RBN.
Well, I wrote Rick Adams a short note, right? Because he had Skip Baker on. And Skip Baker, don't get me wrong, Skip. I really believe that Skip is a genuinely nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a Bible clown. He doesn't know his history. He doesn't know his Bible. He has three or four lines that he likes to repeat that he got from Eli, and then he just blindly follows Eli. And he doesn't really know his history and his scripture, and he shouldn't be in a position to be representing Christian identity. So that's my opinion, and I would say it right to Skip's face. He has half his facts misconstrued because he has no depth to his knowledge. He can't stand up to questioning. He has to resort to I don't know and maybes and all the garbage that's fully evident when you don't know what the hell you're talking about because you have no deep knowledge. You only have a few surface facts.
Yeah.
There's topics I don't really like to get into in depth because I admit I don't have the knowledge.
You know, and that's, you know, it's, I wouldn't go on representing myself on Republic Radio as being a World War II expert. I know a lot about certain facets of history, but I don't know a lot about the logistics, the battles, and a whole lot of other little details like that, because that's not my primary area of study. You know, and I'm going to be right up front about that. Well, I wrote Rick Adams, and I said, look, what do you have Skip Baker representing Christian Identity for on so many programs that you're doing with him? He's a clown. He doesn't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I wrote him. Mm-hmm. And I wrote him as WilliamFink@ChristianIdentity.org and never received a response.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get any response.
Mm-hmm.
I think Rick Adams probably knows or recognizes ChristianIdentity.org just because of all the work he did with Eli. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just thinking too highly of myself. But he should go peek. And I don't know. I think Rick Adams is a shill because he's so quick to have somebody like Skip Baker on so often who really doesn't. He's a nice guy, but he doesn't know anything. He has nothing to offer except the five or six little lines. He knows more about Seventh-day Adventism than he knows about Christian Identity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, he does know about Seventh-day Adventism, but that doesn't do us any damn good. That doesn't help.
Well, we'll have to call in and ask it.
From Seventh Day.
Yeah, whatever Ron Wyatt is, I think it's Seventh Day. Ellen G. White, is that Seventh Day Adventist?
Yeah.
Well, then that's what Skip Baker was.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows a lot about Ellen G. White and Seventh Day Adventism, but he doesn't know anything like he should know about Christian Identity if he's on programs representing Christian Identity.
No.
So that's just making Christian Identity look bad to the audience.
Right.
Which maybe that's what this Rick Adams clown wants to do.
Yeah, I don't know. I do know that listening to him, sometimes he'll, like, if you say the flood wasn't wide, he'll agree with it. And then you get somebody else on there that says the flood was in a certain area, you know, wasn't worldwide. He'll agree at that too. You know, he just won't take a stance, you know, a stand on.
No.
You know,
which is Jelly Spine, right?
Yes.
That sounds to me like Greg Howard. I'm on a program with Greg Howard, and he's agreeing with everything I say. And Eli goes on a program with Greg Howard, says everything the exact opposite, and he's agreeing with everything he says.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like Bill Clinton. I heard Bill Clinton was like that. My brother's friend was working in the Clinton administration back in the 80s, and he said that Bill Clinton was exactly that.
Why not? Everybody loves you that way.
NRA people, and he was all guns, pro guns, and then when he's in the other room with the communists, he'd take the guns off the people.
Yeah, that's what a man pleaser does.
Yes.
Seeks to please men rather than determine the truth and seek to please God and stand up for the truth, even if you're wrong.
Yes. No one to bring to mess.
Right.
There's no absence. Got to have an absolute. Without that.
Well, right. You have to stand up for what you believe in and stick by it and tell people when they differ. And if you're wrong, well, you have to be willing to listen to other ideas and compare them to yours and choose which one you feel is true. And that's what that's how we assess the truth, right? Or we'd never arrive at anything. But you don't just patently agree with everything that you hear because, now you're just, you're not finding the truth, nor are you defending it.
No.
So that's just a politician strategy. That's not a truth seeker strategy. And are we politicians, or are we seeking the truth?
Yeah. Well, we're seeking the truth.
I would hope. Eli can talk out of both sides of his mouth because he's trying to be a politician.
Yes. And the Almighty, the Spirit will lead you into all truth.
Well, right. If you don't find the truth, then you probably don't have the Spirit.
Good point.
Or if you refuse to see it because you have an agenda, then you probably don't have the Spirit.
No, that's so. I thought Greg Howe seemed such a pleasant man.
He's a great guy, but he has no backbone. I told him on the telephone that I thought he was a hypocrite for his position on race with his wife, and he won't take a position with Eli on race. He won't stand up to Eli on the same issue that he stood up to his wife about. Greg's made that public knowledge, so I don't mind making it public knowledge. He's already made it public knowledge.
I have the feeling as time goes on, he will begin to assess things better and realize that Eli is not on his wavelength. That's what I feel. Whether that will happen, I don't know.
Well, they have too much in common with all these apocryphal books that they both love, right? And I love apocryphal books. Well, I love scripture, right? And some of the apocryphal books are scripture, and many aren't. And we can't just blindly accept them all. And lately, Eli and Greg are doing this series on the Book of Jubilees. And the Book of Jubilees is a Masoretic fraud.
I haven't heard a program recently. Oh, is it? I've never heard that.
Well, the Christianity Monday Night Open Forum has moved to Saturdays at 8 p.m.
Right.
Because I got the feeling that Eli wanted company when he started up a Friday program opposite mine, right? I thought maybe he missed me, so I started up a Saturday program opposite him.
Well, that should be interesting, won't it?
Well, we had a full house this past Saturday. I did my baptism in wet paper, and there were over 30 people in there for most of the program.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, people will know when there's some substance, because I don't find a substance. I'm not interested in hearing him, actually, because he keeps breaking into what the... It's a meaning comment. It's a bit boring. So I haven't been in a few weeks. If I've absolutely got nothing else to do, I'll listen to the recording, but I won't go on the program.
Well, tomorrow night I'm going to do the second half of Matthew chapter 24. And hopefully I'll finish Matthew chapter 24 tomorrow. I don't know until I sit to write my notes in the morning. Saturday I'm going to have Don Spears on with me, I hope. And Don was a 30-year Baptist pastor who was retired, but he's sound Christian identity.
So that is earlier in day, isn't it? We could come into that program. Is that earlier in day on Saturday?
No.
Oh.
No, that's 8 p.m. on Saturday.
Oh, it's the same. Oh, okay.
1 o'clock in the morning?
Well, that's early in the day. Dorcas?
Not for me.
Technically.
Not for me. Oh, my dear.
Well, the podcast's always on the front page of Christogenia before I go to bed, right? As God willing.
Yes, I look at it each day. Yes, wonderful.
Yeah, it's so good that you don't know all those horrible adverts.
Oh, wow, those advertisements are just terrible.
Oh.
Was it every 10 minutes, something like that?
Oh, it's not even that in times.
Well, I have a schedule. Deanna was nice enough to send me a schedule of the advertising. I tried to keep it in mind a few times, but it really didn't always work, right?
There's usually one long segment, isn't there, somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, it just stopped the whole program.
Yes, it breaks the momentum, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, at least if you listen to an MP3 download, you can fast forward through that, but...
Yeah. Do you have to line in to get the repeat of the program?
What, the archive?
Yes. I have to
You have to log in.
Well, I made the program on the Mein Kampf site, the Dina Spagnola program. I did that archive. I made that public.
Oh, right. We can just download that then.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right.
I don't know if you've been to my Mein Kampf site, mk.christiagenia.org.
I haven't on it. Just go into the Soul Brethren program.
Okay. I just rarely talk about it here, right?
No, I have gone in to hear that program.
Well, there's about 70 podcasts on that site so far that I've done with Sword Brethren.
Yes, amazing. Yes.
Yeah, I'm having to buy a new MP3 with a bigger memory.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I don't know how many gigabytes of podcasts I have now, but it's about 500 podcasts. That's at least 5 gigabytes at 10 megabytes apiece.
Mm. I know. Well, I've got 8 gigabytes of memory on my MP3, and it's not really enough.
Okay. Wow. I only have 2 gigabytes. I have to empty it all the time.
Yeah, and it's been useless. I like going back over.
Deanna say anything of inviting you back on or during the commercials?
Before we did the program, she indicated that she wanted to have me on a few times, but since we did the program, she hasn't indicated that she wants me back on right away. I mean, if it happens, it happens, right?
Yeah. Well, maybe the other guys will... Maybe other guys will invite you on, since they're inviting Eli, the Skip Baker guy, and we'll see. Your friend Charles did anything, huh?
Charles Giuliani? Well, I got him hooked up pretty good, right?
Yeah.
If you go to... CharlesGiuliani.com. Go to that site and see what that's like. Whoops, I screwed that up. Let me take that out. There you go. Check out CharlesGiuliani.com.
Alrighty. This computer is so slow.
Yeah, Chris, look at here. Neat.
I'm still waiting.
Yeah, that was just an idea I got that actually somebody else had given me when he found out that CharlesGiuliani.com was available, right? And it only cost me $5, so I had to do it. I had to do it.
I'm trying to wait for it to come up.
That's what he gets for talking about me interminably for 3 weeks after the program we did together.
And he deserved it. Couldn't have
been
a better
Jewish.
Person.
He's not Jewish, huh?
Well, he sure as hell has all the methodology of the Jews down pretty good, and he's accepted that the entire Jewish plot for the white race, right, to race mix it. I mean, that's that idea that other alien peoples could come and share in our culture and become like us. That's the Jewish plot for humanity.
Yeah, he's bought into it.
Yeah, he helps the Jews out more than hurts them.
Well, absolutely.
I mean, when you listen to him, he mocks Yahweh all the time.
All the time.
So, and he won't be long on this earth doing that. You watch and see. You just can't. If he is one of us. He's a devil. They're expected to do that. But if you're I believe you're a white man and you mock Yahweh like that, something will happen to you.
Well, I think that the only way he could do that is because he's a crypto devil, right? I mean.
Mhm.
Yeah.
I mean, the way he gets.
Yeah.
To me, he
was full of venom.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as I got into the program with him, he didn't really let me present history or what I thought identity was or any of that. He just wanted to know right away about the other races.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
That was his first line of questioning.
Like they're all like that. What about the blacks?
Which leads me to believe that he was purposely told to get me on there to try to trip me up. And he couldn't.
Mm.
So he started mocking and cursing God because he couldn't trip me up. Well, good for him. He proved who he was right there.
Yeah.
He couldn't refute my scriptures, so he proved who he was right there.
Yeah, the way he went on and on and on about Yahweh and everything. What an idiot. What kind of God can do this, and circumcision, and blah, blah, you know. And, of course, he only speaks one-sided. So, to me, myself, I think you could say he's a crypto Jew, but I think all my indicators say that thumbs down.
Tend to agree with you, because he was venomous.
And getting fanatic too, just crazy. Like he kind of reminds me of that Michael Savage, this Jewish Michael Wiener, whatever his name is on San Francisco. He's the same way. He just really gets fanatical, just gets crazy. Hysterical is the word I'm looking for.
Somebody emailed me this week, and they said that Anders Breivik, the Norwegian farmer, was Jewish, and I asked for the source, and I haven't had a reply yet. Have you seen anything to that?
I've seen a lot of people taking that shot, but yeah. Nobody's documented it, right?
No.
Yeah, they're just branding him as a nationalist, you know. But why would a man like that go out if he hated the Muslims and the multiculturalism so much? Why would he go out and kill all his own people?
Well, that's the first thing you have to bring up to everybody that you discuss it with, right? That nationalists love their people. That's why they become nationalists. And they would never kill their own people. Real nationalists never kill their own people, period.
I think that this man, this guy, the guy that did all that, I think he's one of those, my personal opinion, I think he's one of these brainwashed, these robots, like human robots, you know, programmed to do the mind control thing.
Yeah,
sort of MK Ultra and all that sort of thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, he certainly has Julia look on his face all the time, doesn't he?
Yes.
It's the same look. It never changes.
He's programmed. I wonder who his handlers are, you know? If he has...
Well, I think we can guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they say that those people have their people that can control them. They're with them all the time to make sure that they stay under control.
Well, he had a Jewish friend that was a politician in Sweden that he had wrote, and I wrote about him somewhere, that he had written
an hour before the bombing.
Mm-hmm. I think I've written the name in there.
Yeah, that's him. And there was several websites that I found wrote about this guy as soon as that this connection was made, almost as soon as it happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, as soon as I heard that shooting, I knew it was, here we go again. Watch the kind of legislation they're going to pass. Usually they try to pass some certain legislation or whatever.
But this time they wanted all the governments in Europe to go after the right-wing extremists. That's why Bill wrote that article.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's just like 9/11. I remember while it was happening, I was saying to my wife, I just watched some type of big legislation pop up and they'll pass, and that was the Homeland Security.
It was the Patriot Act, wasn't it, that was already being prepared?
Yeah, it was the Homeland Security, and the Homeland Security Act that started Homeland Security. And that's totally against the Constitution. You know, we don't need any Homeland Security or anything like that. We have militias. We have the Second Amendment.
Well, even here, they were reporting on it like this guy was a real right-wing nut job that hated Muslims. Well, if he hates Muslims, why is he shooting white people?
Right.
Mm.
And I pointed out in the article that the Israeli media was publishing the truth, that he was a fervent Zionist that was going after people, liberals, that we were against Zionism.
Yeah.
He did shoot some Muslims.
Yeah. Well, he shot a lot more white people. If he shot one Muslim, he shot a hell of a lot more white people.
Yeah.
I didn't hear any reports that there were Muslims in the crowd, but it's immaterial because that there were almost exclusively white people in the crowd.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if there were 3 Muslims or 10 Muslims, it's immaterial that there were 80 white people.
And they were anti-Israel.
But all those white people there were anti-Israel. That's my point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, ISIS has just written in about 4 of his victims.
4 of his victims were non-white. That doesn't sound like any big not Muslim hater to me when you have 86 or 90 whites and 4 mm-hmm. non-whites.
Well, do you remember... years back, I don't know, maybe 5 years back, that Hmong guy that shot all those white people? The guy he's on this guy's property, this Hmong?
Yeah, he was in a deer stand, a tree stand that he wasn't supposed to be in.
And he murdered and shot all those white guys coming back from...
They took a lot of the Cambodians and they transplanted them to Wisconsin, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this government has moved a lot of non-whites into America that most Americans don't even know about because the media has been totally silent about it.
Exactly.
And that's what we have, the hills of North Carolina, you know, they moved Cambodians into there, they moved Vietnamese into California, they moved a whole bunch of Iraqis into central Oklahoma after the first Gulf War.
Yep.
That they dropped off tens of thousands of Somalians had been moved to Minnesota and Maine.
Okay, from Iraq.
It's all done by stealth.
Yeah, the Okie from Iraq. Used to be Okie from the sea, now it's Okie from Iraq.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You are.
I'm on it tonight. So, you know, you Englishies, I have to tell you, I have to start a fire tonight in my fireplace.
Why?
What about you guys? Is it pretty kind of cool over there?
Oh, it is cold here.
Yeah.
It did get down to 6 degrees last night.
Yeah, I started a fire here.
So, it's been in the 50s here.
Weird.
6 degrees. I gotta divide that by 5 and multiply it by 9. That's 1 1/4. That's 10. And that's 42 degrees Fahrenheit. That ain't too bad.
that's low. Low. Wow.
I don't know. I just, I don't like using the, we have oil heating here. I don't like using the oil if I don't have to. So I got all this wood, so I thought I'd just start a little fire in it.
There's nothing more cheering than a blaze. It's
fire. We have a fire going.
Yeah.
And on the internet with all my friends. You can't get it on the internet. So.
No,
and my little dog, she loves it when I light the fire.
Yeah.
She's in front of the fire, and she won't, even if the sparks is, don't chase her away.
Yeah. When I visit my daughter, they have a log fire. And it makes all the difference. It brings everything to life, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's interesting that it's 13 degrees in Iceland at the moment.
Oh, is it?
According to the news, anyway.
Wow. 13 degrees.
Well, 6 degrees is closer to 46 degrees Fahrenheit. 13 degrees, that's just paradise. That's tropical.
That's what it was here last winter, down to 60.
Well, it's not much cooler in Britain than it's been here at night. It's been dropping into the low 50s here at night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, which is a little earlier than normal for that kind of weather, right? And I'm starting to worry about my garden because I'm
right.
just getting it going. I believe it or not, it's been a slow garden this year.
Yeah, it's been a funny year, hasn't it? You've had tremendous heat, and and it's only August. We should be in summer.
Yeah.
Well, right. My Brussels sprouts and broccoli, and I want to plant another round of spinach and. I might get to do that Saturday or Sunday. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I found from planting that broccoli, Bill, that you gotta over here. You gotta watch out for that little. There's a little white butterfly that flies around and lays the eggs on it.
Cabbage white.
Well, not cabbage. My broccoli.
No, but it's called a cabbage white butterfly.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Well, it does. It gets the broccoli too, and it ruined most of my broccoli, especially the leaves and everything on it. So I don't know. I guess when you plant broccoli, you got to put a real light like mesh around it or something like that to keep the. Unless you got out.
Well, the heat destroyed my broccoli. It all went to seed before I could turn around.
Oh, the broccoli grew over here, Bill. Like crazy. Wow, it really grew fast and big, just like that. I just planted some table lettuce about 3 weeks ago. It's called table lettuce. A little leafy, real nice leaves on it for salads and stuff like that. And it's already, I've already harvested. Grew that fast. So.
But
the weather just seems like it's taking a dive or something. So.
Yeah.
I mean, this global warming, you guys, we're going to have to do something about it. We're going to have an organization going or something.
And New Zealand's having a really cold winter, and that must be global warming as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. You know, the floods they had in Australia, that was because of global warming, and it's almost comical.
It would be if it wasn't transferring our wealth to, their pocket.
Oh, sure.
In fact, no one would be able to invade England because we're having all these wind farms put around. We're having the biggest wind farm in the world, Suffolk and Norfolk.
In the sea. All it is mince up the birds.
I know. It
does a job on the birds.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what article really got me was that, what was it, Stealth China?
Yeah.
Article, I think it was from Clifton.
Yeah, Clifton found that in a book, and he went to find it online, and it wasn't anywhere to be found. So he scanned it and OCR'd it and typed it up.
Yeah, that really, you know, that was what, back in 2001 or something like that, it was published. That was really heartening.
Yes, certainly.
That they have a fleet, the Red Chinese. I mean, well, what got it also was you mentioning, Bill, I never heard about it, was you mentioning that about Chinatowns popping up everywhere.
Yeah, right.
And, geez, when I think about it, you know, that's right. Because I was in Columbus, Ohio a few years back, and they have a Chinatown there, too.
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah. London's got a big Chinatown.
Well, back over the summer, I drove down to Binghamton, and I had stopped about halfway between here and Binghamton. Binghamton's the nearest large city to me, right? It's an hour away. And it's about 100,000+ people, but there's a few other large towns that are suburbs of it. Johnson City and Vestal and it's Johnson City was actually IBM's original town, right? IBM had huge plants there at one time. They're all gone now. But I'm on my way to Binghamton, and I stopped in a gas station, in a Hess station that has like a Quick Mart, and got gas, and the bus pulled in full of Chinese people. The whole bus was full of Chinese people. And I thought, oh, no, there goes the colonies. They're up here scouting for a new settlement.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's the first thing I could think of. They're going to buy up some town.
Mm.
What would a busload of Chinese people be doing in 4 hours from New York City if they weren't about to send out a new colony? That's the way I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they are. And I don't think all these Chinese people got here by plane and made applications for citizenship. Something tells me that didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, just amazing. What got me is how they can set these ships in our harbors and stuff. Because, you know, where I worked down in Long Beach there in Southern California off the islands, he mentions Pier J. That was where I used to catch the boat to go out to work on the drilling rigs, drilling oil wells. And I remember that whole massive, I mean, you're talking a huge dock. That whole area went to this company called Costco. And, I mean, that was way back in the 80s that this stuff was going on. And you know, I didn't realize it was, you know, the Chinese. And then finally they got the military base, the Navy base in Long Beach there. Clinton loaned it to them. He was the one that pushed that.
They
call that China Gate, whatever. And getting, you know, the
loans. Donnie, is that Costco?
Well, there's
but it's not Costco.
No.
No, it's Costco.
And it's
China Overseas Shipping Company.
Overseas Shipping Company.
Yes, that's what I thought. Right, okay.
I became familiar with them in the late 70s when I was loading trucks when I was a kid and unloading trucks and all the big waxy that they used to coat them with wax. Cardboard boxes filled with Chinese goods, and the boxes all said China Overseas Shipping Company on them. But like the shipping company packed the boxes, you know what I mean? They weren't packed by the company that made the goods. It was really weird, and that's that these huge cardboard boxes, China Overseas Shipping Company, written all over them.
Right.
And that was for at that time it was for EJ Corvettes, which was an American department store chain that went bankrupt.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, like I said, it was written back in 2001.
Yes, and the containers. And these containers are massive, massive.
Oh, when you think of these ships and what these ships hold, you know, they They got them. These can visit Orient Overseas Container, OOCL. You've seen a lot of them trucks with those containers on it going everywhere. And these ships are so massive that why couldn't they be converted into a military ship and have missiles and nuclear ship missiles and stuff like that? I mean, it's...
Well, it's just a modern day version of a Trojan, isn't it?
Exactly. There you go.
That's what it is.
And no one, you know...
They probably don't need missiles.
Did the Pirates win? Did the football team, our football team win? The most important thing, you know. Oh, honey, did you get the dirt? I told you.
Yeah.
I always believed that we were going to be invaded.
What about Panama now? I mean...
Britannia rules the wags.
Mm-hmm.
That should be the nation's slogan.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about sex and soccer wives.
That's really hit home.
Yes.
And
I run out of ink printing battles.
Yeah.
Because I can't tell how many pages it is. 20 pages, wasn't it?
Yeah, 21 pages, whatever. But I remember my cousin mentioning, he had, this was years and years back. I think I've probably already mentioned it to you guys. He mentioned to me that through this, he was in the FBI training or something like that, and he heard about the four points on the southern border, that the Red Chinese Army was actually based down in the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. And they had these four points. Even the FBI even knew that they had the Red China, they could, through railroads, rush the troops right up border just like that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's, what is it, George Washington's vision is starting to sound true.
Well, we don't need it. But we don't need it to see what time it is, I mean.
Oh, boy. You just wonder how long it all lasts. How long is it? What's going to be the button? Is it going to be an assault on all our nations with these Chinese, Russian,
well,
there's got races?
It's got to be a complete collapse, hasn't it?
Why? They've already owned us. They already have us. They already control us.
Yes,
well,
they do.
You're going to get to the point.
We're already surrounded. I'm going to reconcile all that real soon in Matthew 24 here.
And the people are going to rebel. I'm just at the belief that when the patriots and everything grab their rifles, when they do, cause a ruckus, that I believe that these Jews are going to use the Chinese armies and these gangs and everything to counter us.
Okay.
In the United States. And over here, also, people are going
to... I'm not sure they need to do that, actually.
Nope.
No, because they're all deep. Definitely.
I don't know. A lot of people... I believe that there's a lot of people that are just waiting to... for an excuse. all war.
I think it would be at least 20 in the middle.
Yeah, another thing too is as I said before, I don't know. When they upset people's programs and they upset their daily routines, when you can't get the food, when the babies start getting hungry, that type of stuff happens. That's when I believe that there will be a rebellion.
It's difficult to induce, isn't it, what will happen, really?
Yeah, you know. But Christ said that we'd be marrying and eating and...
Marrying and giving in marriage. And the only way both scenarios are possible is if we're already surrounded by our enemies. I'll be talking about it at length on my Matthew 24 program.
Right.
Yeah, he
says
both scenarios have to be true. And there's five virgins that know what time it is, and there's five virgins that are off buying oil. And well, why are they off buying oil? Well, where are they? They're in the markets.
Mm-hmm.
They're caught up in the system. That's the way I look at that.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I've never heard that take on that before.
They
associate oil with the Holy Spirit, don't they?
Yeah, but you can't buy them.
No, that's true. That's interesting.
The oil is knowledge, and the people that are off partying with the devil, the minute's going to come when they say, what the hell is going on? And it's too late.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't want to let the whole cat out of the bag on my Matthew 24.
No. No, we'll be there.
Well, I believe it's going to get bloody because it does say that, you know, the blood's going to flow to the horse's bit.
Well, Babylon has to fall first, period. End of story. The system has to collapse.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing going to happen until the system collapses.
Well,
those five virgins off in the market, they're the people that, you know, come out from her lest she suffer her punishments. And they're not all going to understand that, and a lot of them are going to die because they're off gambling in Vegas or whoring in New York City or Miami Beach or Southern Cal or wherever they're whoring. But with the Jews and the aliens and yucking it up and having a great time.
But then that little sand in the Middle East has got to go, hasn't it?
Well, yes, it does. But that's that might be God's doing.
My dad used to call it sandbox.
It may not be the Ayatollah that pulls that one off, right? I mean, it may be, but it may not be. Of course, by the Ayatollah, I mean the Iranian people in general, right?
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, that's paramount. That's, you know, Esau returns and says, I will build up the waste places, and Yahweh says, well, I will throw down. Yeah, you know, that's the fulfillment of Malachi and Obadiah.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to happen. It's just a matter of when. And it's our duty to bear this message and to be patient. That's really all we're told to do. And until the signal comes, when I think that when it happens, we will know it from God, and there will be no stopping it when it says, arise, Zion, and thresh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the system has to collapse first. And we can't make the system collapse. You know, there's a lot of fleshly people that want to bring that on for themselves, and we can't do it. It's not what the Word says.
No, absolutely.
Hello, Alan Truitt, and welcome to Christogenia. Oh, he disconnected already. Oh, well. He's new here. He's a...
saw him alive today.
He does a lot of work for... He does his own newsletter in Sacred Nation, I think it's called, and things like that. Pretty active in identity.
Very interesting.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. What, who do you think Obama's going to get back as president?
Well, I'll tell you something. If Obama loses an election, boy, are the niggers going to go off then. I really have them going off.
Think it'll depend on the diebold voting machines.
Well, have you heard about the flash riots, the flash mobs? I'll bet you haven't heard a word about the flash mobs
no.
in your media.
I have.
That's where...
Danny, I think we lost.
Randomly?
Yeah.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, these Negro flash mobs. These Negroes have been gathering randomly, just like the Tottenham riots, they're saying, right? On through social networks, on cell phones. Well, something's been setting these Negroes off, and it's happened 4 or 5 times so far in Philadelphia. It's happened in Boston. It's happened in New Jersey. It's happened now in Kansas City just the other night. And it's happened in... At the Wisconsin State Fair, there was a mob, and they were all black, beating up white people, purposely singling out whites at the Wisconsin State Fair. And that was about 10 days ago or so. And these flash mobs, it's even happened in Ottawa, Canada. Sometimes that they'll just go clean out a store. 40 or more Negroes will go into a convenience store and just clean it out, take everything, just walk through it and take everything. I have one film, I think it's on John844.com, of that happening in Ottawa, Canada. Now, sometimes they descend on a street and they start beating up all the white people and looting and pillaging shops. And it's been going on all summer. And it seems not to stop. The media is trying to contain it to local reports, and there haven't been any national reports that I've heard of until just the other night. Well, when one of the, I don't even know which one it is offhand, but one of the broadcasting companies that if it was ABC or NBC or Fox, I don't know, did make a national news report about the one in Kansas City, but they never said that they were black. Not that I heard. And I listened to the report, but I didn't watch it.
That's interesting. So right at the beginning of the riots in this, one particular very upmarket restaurant in London was attacked, and all the diners had their wallets lifted and all their jewellery.
Wow.
That didn't make the news other than once, and it was never mentioned again.
Wow.
I think the Ledbury restaurant.
There are other interesting factors that at the beginning, the report of the riots, they did say they were contacting each other by mobile phone and coordinating their actions. So maybe it was a type of the American way of a flash riot.
Well, this has been going on since at least March. The first one that I heard of was in March in Philadelphia, and there were several in June in Philadelphia. And then there were, Boston and New Jersey, and now it's spread to the Midwest.
Yes. There was the jewelers was ransacked as well, wasn't it?
Yes. Quite a few.
But did you hear, I don't know if you remember, I think it was the Rodney King riots they had, the American people, when they, in California, they went to attack the eight. Or the Korean town there, the Koreans were stores and stuff, was shot shooting the niggers trying to rob the place. It was hilarious. But that stopped them. They were shot. Same thing happened there, they start their rioting and everything, and this, it was just, and it was funny too, because there wasn't nothing said about racial, you know, there wasn't any racist stuff. It was okay for the Koreans to do it, but if there was white men up there shooting, it would have been made a big deal about it.
The more that the media trumpets the triumph of multiculturalism, the more do the Negroes and the Mexicans understand that white society has weakened. They know this.
Yeah.
That they see it.
Oh.
That they can sense it. And as soon as white society weakens enough, they understand that they can attempt to overthrow it. Because they don't want to take part in our society. They don't understand our laws.
Mm-hmm.
They despise our laws.
Right.
They can only live by the law of the jungle.
Jungle.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they are.
Satan and destroyed. Yeah, they're indoctrinated. You know, the Jew worked on them for hundreds of years now, especially here in America.
And that's why any interpretation of eschatology that's bent to support the continued existence of these mongrel races is just wrong, because they will never, ever, ever live by the rule of law. They don't have it in them. Hello, Alan, and welcome to Christogenia. I tried to welcome you before, but you had dropped out. Is he still here, or did he drop out again? Nah, he's here.
Yeah, I think he's still here. Yeah. Pretty good crowd.
Can Alan speak?
What happened to us from Germany?
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Hello.
Yes.
Hello. Yes, we hear you.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm just trying to figure out how to work this thing out, brother. Thanks. How you doing, bro?
Okay, how are you doing?
We're switching computers.
Well, it sounds like you've got it, right? I mean, you're coming across all right, at least.
Excellent. So,
and there's no feedback, so. Well, you've kind of tripped into the Euro forum that we have every other week, right?
Every third Thursday.
Okay, I'm just hanging around and listening if y'all don't mind. We'll try to get a feel of this thing.
Okay.
Yeah, we're talking of yard monkeys and how they riot, and it's amazing how they learn to. They even have them driving us now.
You do realize it's politically incorrect to call them yard monkeys, right?
That's all.
Yeah, but it's a hell of a lot more fun to be politically incorrect.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, the reason Matthew isn't here is he's welcoming his guests for the gathering, which starts tomorrow morning. So they would be arriving today.
Oh.
I was wondering if I get some sort of invitation to speak at that like I did last year, but it never came, so I guess Matthew has an agenda.
Are your feelings hurt now, Bill?
No. I just thought I'd mention that. I'm sure Eli might be talking there. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I think all right, actually. I should be surprised if he isn't speaking there. Anyway.
Eli's a lot more agreeable to those Belgians anyway, right?
Although Dutch ladies are not going.
They're not going?
No. I don't know. I don't think there's any from Holland. There are a few Germans. She's got about a dozen dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's June and Chris and the farmer. I don't know his name, from this country. They're stopping over in Holland. Visit the Dutch ladies to break their journey, and they stay with them overnight. Then they go on to Bavaria.
I don't think the Dutch ladies were too thrilled with me last year.
No, they weren't, no.
They're universal.
Yeah,
oil and water can't mix.
Nope. Mm. It's a horrible shame, too.
Who are we speaking about?
Annika.
Anna. Annika.
And Josephine. Their parents were very into British Israel, and they were brought mm-hmm. up with that from their youth. And mm-hmm. they carried on. Their parents died. Yes, but they're hanging in there because they are accepting. Matthew sort of brings that point to them, and
mm-hmm.
they're still around, so they haven't shut themselves off.
Right.
And Chris is staying there. Are they going to meet Rhea? Do you know Rhea? She seems to leave the people. Well, she uh-huh. was to Seedline years ago.
Uh-huh.
And somebody in British Israel told her she ought to be ashamed of herself and go and study. And she completely changed. And,
wow, I'd like to talk to that clown.
Yeah. And she's very versed in scripture.
Uh-huh.
Very interesting one.
Mm.
So she's used to, they meet in her house.
Yeah, I would like to set a Bible study up to here. It would be nice to have a group of us here.
Yes, it's nice to get
working on talking to people and seeing. There's a few people here that I got in touch with Martin, you know, Bill.
Yes, wonderful guy, too. Wonderful man.
Yeah, he and I are going to have some time. And I, Ray Allen, of course, comes over and we get together. So, and then I'm always having to. We're always gabbing. We haven't got Dorcas too much, but we always talk on the TeamSpeak, so.
Do you? Yeah. I never lose the right time. Yes, I must confess, I have neglected that.
Well, you know, it's just nice that we do have a place to go that we can talk to our people that understand.
Yes, that's true. So true.
So.
Yeah.
And I just remember coming over here years ago. I just didn't know anyone that my friends that I had in the States. So.
Yes. Yes, it's important to have fellowship, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
With like-minded people.
Right.
Mm.
Then understand. Yeah, Suffolk's man. Where's,
Well, he's in the European Convention.
Oh, I see.
Which, you know, Bavaria Man is hosting.
Oh, right. And where is this taking place?
Bavaria.
In Bavaria.
Now, that would make sense if Bavaria Man is hosting it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, got me on that one. Well, you know, the countries are too close here. So, especially on Ireland here, it's... You know, you can go to Italy in 4 hours, Spain in about 4 hours. You can go to France in an hour and 15 minutes. You could be in Paris.
Well, I'm in New York. I could be in Babylon in 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Thought you already were.
Yeah. Well, I mean, New York City, right?
Yeah, I New York. I think I was there. I was in New York City one day. One day.
Sorry to hear that.
Wow. But And I got pictures, funny too, I got a picture with my wife. We were going over to Liberty Island, where the Statue of Liberty is, and I got pictures of her with the Twin Towers hanging, and, you know.
Liberty Island is just 2 miles from where I grew up.
Is that right, yeah?
Yep. In Jersey City. It's in Jersey City.
I heard that New York City has some of the best restaurants. Is that true?
No.
Phil?
I like the restaurants in North Jersey a lot better because they're a lot cheaper with basically the same food.
What about Italian? Where do you get the good Italian, good Dago food?
Well, I haven't been there in since 1995, right? So.
Yeah.
But you don't get the real Italian food in New York City. You get the tourist trap food, right?
Right.
You have to go to North Jersey.
North
you got to go to Bergen County, New Jersey, right, to get the real Italian.
What's
food.
The name of it?
That there's a million Bergen places. Bergen County, right?
Bergen County, that's it. Well, I always, being from Ohio, I was born in Ohio, you know, I always heard that, you know, that there was a war between New York, Jersey, and Boston, best Italian food was made, or where they made the best pizza, you know, and all that, so.
Yeah, well, in New York City, all you're going to get, unless you got the money to eat in the best places or out on Long Island, then you're going to get the tourist food. In the city, right?
Yeah.
You go to Little Italy is all Chinese. When I left, the last I've been there was 95, and Little Italy was taken over by Chinese shops, and there were just a couple of Italian pastry shops and a couple of Italian restaurants left.
Wow.
And they were the tourist places that had a lot of traffic that could stay open, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that Chinese food, you know, I don't trust that stuff. And the Indian food.
Oh, I would never eat Indian food. No, even when I was dumb as hell and didn't know anything, I wouldn't eat Indian food because simply because they refuse to kill bugs, right?
Right.
And the Chinese, you get melamine with it and all sorts.
Right.
Ugh. And those Indians eat rats and everything. They prepare dishes. And this is not fantasy. They really do that. That's one of their dirt. I forgot the name of it, but they catch rats. They have rats that they breed for, you know, they raise for eating and everything, like you would do cattle.
Well, my experience with Indians and Pakistanis is that they're basically filthy people.
They smell terrible. They really do. I'm kidding.
And I wouldn't eat in one of the restaurants ever.
Oh, no, never. I mean, I wouldn't be conquered. And now they're coming into the gym where I go. And if you're sitting there on one of the bikes doing an exercise, the little Indian women, and you know where they sit, they have to sit right next to you. And I try to sit far away, you know, and of course they got to sit right next to you.
Well, you might be better off working out at home, right?
Yeah. And it just seems like they do have a terrible odor about themselves. I don't know their paganism and whether bathing is prohibited. I think it is.
Hey, Bill, excuse me, what's the best time to come on here for... Christian, you know, discussion and stuff like that. What time do you recommend?
Well, there's people here every evening. There's people here from like 8 o'clock till 2 a.m., 3 a.m. every evening.
Mm-hmm.
That this is 24/7, right? There aren't too many people here during the day, but that this is a 24/7 server, and people come here every evening. They congregate here. It's usually pretty good. I mean, it's not busy every evening, but there's people here every evening.
Okay. I just like a certain time set up for certain, you know, groups.
I had my open forum here on Mondays for 15 months, but I just moved it back to TalkShoe last week, right?
Oh, okay.
My open forum program used to be on Mondays at 9 p.m. here, and it was for over a year, but I just moved it back to Talk Shoe at 8 p.m. on Saturdays.
Okay, so I presume I'm not being rude if I butt in on the conversation.
No, you're more than welcome. This is the your old fellowship forum that I have twice a month, and most of the people in here are friends from Great Britain and Germany, and there was a young woman here from Romania. She's still here. Mm-hmm. No, she left. And sometimes there's people here from Germany, and Icelanders here, and of course he's from Iceland.
Denmark?
Yeah, man, of Dan's here from Denmark.
Yep.
I'm going to say night to everybody, if you'll excuse me.
Yeah, okay, Dorcas, good night, and may Yahweh bless you.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Yahweh bless you.
Yes, bye.
No, Alan, we used to talk about everything here.
Okay.
Very interesting.
I noticed that I have this button that I toggle for talk, and it fills in the chat space down there. Do I just have to press it once or hold it down?
I think you have to hold it down if you're on push to talk.
Yes, very sure. Yep, he held it down.
Yeah, you need to use a different key, right? It should be like one of the F keys, like F6 or F10 or something like that that's not used for anything. It would be the best push-to-talk button. Something that you usually don't use for typing.
Yeah, I'm gonna go do that right now. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I understand, Al. I went through the same thing. I still go through it.
Well, I'm computer illiterate. I'm telling you right now. I ain't got a clue.
Join the club.
The first time I ever used a computer was less than a year ago, so, you know.
Yep. It's almost like the Bible. You're always learning something new on the computer. So,
Alan, you can bring up subjects you wish.
He's trying to figure out his push-to-talk routine, his push-to-talk buttons.
So is that different from the way we operate?
Well, he had the
maybe
like the T key or something as his push to talk button, and it was also going into the chat, right?
Maybe he should try that voice activation.
Well, if he doesn't have a headset, the voice activation isn't going to work, and I think that was his problem in the first place.
All right.
Okay, how's that? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can hear you clearly.
Okay, I got it fixed. I did the F1 key instead of the other one. It's not leaving anything on the chat, but that works. Thank you.
Alan, why don't you introduce yourself to the people here?
Okay, well, my name is Alan Truitt, and I'm a Christian identist. I study and live pretty much my entire life surrounding obedience to life law, and, you know, I'm interested in biblical studies, conversation. I do a radio show for the Aryan Nation on Talk Show, and I'm involved with the South Africa Project.
Oh, very good.
Well, what's the South Africa Project?
Yeah.
Well, the South Africa Project is, you can go to the website, it's www.southafricaproject.info. And essentially what we're doing is trying to bring awareness to the genocide of the Afrikaner in South Africa, because nobody's paying attention to it in the mainstream press. So
that's true.
And so we'll get groups of people together in various states, and we're going to schedule some peaceful marches just to try to draw attention. But we're also passing out flyers, making videos, doing everything we possibly can to try to help these folks over there.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Are a lot of people, are a lot of these South Africans immigrating without any trouble, especially the professional South Africans, that the white South Africans coming in, are they finding it difficult to get into, say, England or in the British Isles or America?
Well, you know, I mean, based on our own immigration policies, we pretty much forbid, the intake of white immigrants. They prefer the darker kind here in America, you know. So, another thing is that I've learned is that, I've talked to several people from South Africa, and when they leave the country for any reason whatsoever, all of their, assets are subject to be frozen and taken away, their land squatted on, and when they come back, they have nothing.
Yeah. But how can we help them? Because, I mean, it's a definite policy in South Africa to destroy what is left of the white people there. So it's government policy virtually, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and that's why it's recognized by genocide, and they're supposed to be in stage six of, the eight stages of genocide. But what we're hoping to do, my main focus on it is to draw the parallels between the policies since 1994 in South Africa and the ANC government coming into play and what's going on in the United States right now with the same affirmative action type policies and black on white crime in this country.
Yeah.
Because I believe that exactly what's happening in South Africa right now will happen here, and it's a lot sooner than we think. So I think it's important to draw the parallel in that, but also it can't hurt to draw more attention to the issue,
No, I agree.
I'm not in any way whatsoever, suffering from the delusion that we're going to be able to stop it, because I don't think that it's possible at this point. I think it's gone too far. But irregardless, I feel duty-bound to do everything I can for those Christian folk over there. It's just the way I'm built.
That's good. The reason I ask is because we're often asked for helping in all sorts of ways. Only this week we had emails on this subject. And it's so difficult here to know what you can do that would have any meaningful impact.
Yeah, pray every single day is what I do, that somehow, some way, intervention will come. I don't know. It's hard to struggle on an issue like this and at the same time feel helpless. I don't really know what to do. I just know that I have to do something,
Well, that's the way our race is supposed to be at the end of days. Despaired and perplexed, so that we've learned that Yahweh is our sovereign. And that's, we might know it, but we have millions of brethren who would still rather party with the devil.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the absolute truth, sir.
Alan, is there a channel or is there people from South Africa that are provided residency or anything in the United States? Is there a program you guys have or working on if these people are allowed to come into America, do they have a place to go? And, are they given housing like they do over here with the taxis and everything?
The government don't even want them here.
Nothing.
Well, officially the policy obviously does not support that at all. But the point that you bring up is interesting, because I was reading an article the other day where a guy said that, we could learn a lot from Jews, because whenever Jews were allegedly being, persecuted and holocausted, et cetera, collectively the Jewish people came to the rescue of other Jewish people. But white people aren't that way, And, here you've got, 40,000 plus people that have been slaughtered in the most brutal and inhumane ways possible, and on another continent, and we're not doing anything as individuals to help our brothers over there. And I think it's a shame. I think it's important you bring up, and perhaps we ought to start looking at something like that.
Yeah, they get the homes and everything over there. I mean, I'm living in Northern Ireland. I'm an American, but I live in Northern Ireland. And they said to the people here that when I first came over here, you didn't see, there wasn't any dark races here. There was a couple families in town, a white woman married, and they broke up, whatever. But that was about it. Now it's just, we're being flooded. And they just opened, you know, the gates to these people. And they have medical, they got homes they're provided with, and loans for businesses, for them to start businesses. And I was just wondering.
And go ahead, Sister.
I was going to say, and I'm in England, and here, I was just mentioning earlier on this evening that we're spending £1 billion a year on migration, you know, housing, migrants housing. But it's not right.
Yeah, that's an understatement. I don't know. I know that we have received dozens of emails from not just South African individuals, but also from activist groups over there, you know, pretty much militant, you know, groups.
Yes.
They're trying to do everything that they possibly can. They're getting no help from anywhere, and I think it's despicable, you know.
Right. Me too. Are they finding it hard to immigrate into the British Isles?
I wouldn't be qualified to answer that question, but the sister there might know of.
I don't know of anything in here at all.
No, I don't. I mean, you can imagine how a country could be elevated with scientists and their doctors and everything.
Right.
There's some brilliant people there.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. You know, our immigration policies are solely focused on, you know, the mongrelization of white men. So, you know,
Right. They're
designed that way, and I believe that they're going to stick with that policy until every one of us is either dead or brown.
Mm-hmm. Like my dad would say, then what are they going to do? They wipe the white man out, then what are they going to do? Well, they'll just starve to death.
Yeah, who's going to feed them, right?
That's right. But, South Africa and Rhodesia is a prime example to point out to a lot of white people, a lot of white rules and stuff, what happens when you multiculturalize your country and you turn over your leadership to non-whites. In Rhodesia and Zimbabwe there, 10 years ago, they were exporting goods and food and everything, and now there's starvation. Having to release aid for it because the starvation and everything is so bad.
They renamed that fine country Zimbabwe. Rhodesia was the name of it, and they actually went into armed conflict, in fact, over there, over that country, and ended up losing. And you can't forget that it was their own white leaders that sold them out, you know.
Yeah, just like 40 million whites that voted for Obama.
Fainting in the aisles and drooling on themselves, you know.
So they could tell either that, I voted for Obama, I'm not racist.
Yeah, and they want to really believe that all the sacrifices that they're making that they won't actually voice out loud, that they know for a fact they're making, are actually paying off. Because here you got one that's actually able to articulate words and pronounce R's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is. It's just disgusting, but, you know, we're compassion is the very worst of traits and the very best of traits in the white man, you know.
No, you hit him on the head there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we were just talking about that before, and I said that misdirected compassion without the direction of God's law is our worst enemy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. In fact, my daughter came home from school yesterday and said that Daddy, I have a black kid in my class, and he sits right next to me. What do I do? And, you know, she always panics because we, you know, really instill in her that we're not mix, we don't mix, you know. And so when even in the store, if she gets next to a black person, she'll step on the other side of me or my wife, and, you know, and I think that's good, but I wish that everybody would do the same thing.
That's exactly what she should do.
Exactly. Yeah, she's a little girl.
And teach them young. You got to get into them young, because after the media and everything and the cartoons and the Jewish press and Hollywood and Disney, you know, they pound into these kids this multiculturalism, and they're done. You're lost by 10 years old.
Yeah, I agree. And the reason I even brought that up was because we were talking about compassion, and my answer to her was, you know, honey, what we do is we respect everybody, but we don't mix with them and we don't befriend them if they're not white people, you know.
That's right. Stay away from them. Yep, especially our white women.
Yeah, we're losing it up to the other side already, for sure.
Mm. But it's a situation, that South African situation and Rhodesia. Like I've always said, if they wanted those countries, those South Africans should have just burned that everything to the ground. You know, you want this, you want country? Well, there you'll get it just like we got it, in ashes.
Yeah, and
there you go.
It won't be long. It'll be looking just like Detroit and Flint, Michigan, and for that matter, the south side of St. Louis over here where I live. In fact, I'm thinking to make a video about that and you know, pose the question by showing the pictures of what's going on over there. You know, ask people, what city do you think this is? Most people are going to say they're thinking it's Detroit or Flint, Michigan or something, but it's not. It's St. Louis, and it's despicable, man, what they've done to that side of town.
Mm-hmm. Terrible.
You know, those houses built by people who cared. You know, you could tell the architecture was French, German architecture. These were big mansions, and now they're just painted up with trash, and the windows are broke out, and there's broke down cars sitting out on the curbs, and it's crazy.
Well, I saw that happen in Jersey City in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
What was that, Bill?
I saw that happen in Jersey City when I was a little kid in the 60s.
Oh, yeah. It happened every single side of town where white people, you know, vanish.
White.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just wish that while everybody was in the process of white flight, that they would fly to a certain area.
Mm-hmm.
Get a little territorial imperative going on here. That's what we need.
Yeah, the trouble is, it's just like in the neighborhoods where I was raised in Southeast L.A., back in the 60s and everything, when all of a sudden, well, it started out, the Cubans moved in, and then the Mexicans here and there, and right away the whites, instead of staying there, don't move, it begins white flight. And they're, you know, everybody, the white man's trying to sell his house because he knows the neighborhood's going to go down in value, and it's white flight, get out. And then they move somewhere else, and the same thing happens, you know, and these real estate people are making a fortune.
Well, that's because people care more about their home value than about their brother, right? I mean,
that's right. Well, I guess I'm guilty because I just white flighted out of Texas up here to Missouri, and Texas is overrun by Mexicans. You can't even get a job down there for, you know.
Well, you have to. You got to get out of there. You live with those people.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, you know, it's almost, I think that they're majority Hispanic down there now in Texas. I'm not sure. I think whites are a minority now.
Yes, they are.
And
great Texas. I honestly thought that when I came up here, because it's in the north, that it would be worse. And it's not. Actually, I seldom see, I almost never see a Hispanic up here. The Negroes pretty much keep to their side of town, official to me, but I live out in the country, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Alan.
What is...
Yes, sir.
Alan, are you listening to Eli James?
Do I listen to the show?
Yeah.
Once in a while I'll listen to it. I listen to just about everybody's shows, you know.
Okay, not much to research on Eli James.
Yeah, I know.
I
didn't hear anything that was breaking up.
There are a few people come here still that listen to you. I mean, I don't hold it against them.
Well, you know, I've studied scripture, and I listen to everybody. You think about it, I came up under British Israel, which is, you know, about as confused a doctrine as you can possibly get, but it brought me to truth, and that's what I do, is I just seek truth. And, you know, Bill, I've spoken with you on the phone before, and, you know, there's something you're going to agree with and disagree with just about everybody, Arlen. It doesn't matter to me. I just, whatever I think is the truth, you know, that's what I grab a hold of, and the rest of it, I throw away.
Yeah, we have to be objective. Robert, you're breaking up to the point where it's causing pain, right?
I think you'll have to type it in.
Well, he's on his cell phone, and you can't type on the cell phone. It's a new application they just came out with. I was using it last night here. I was coming in clear, but I may have had a better cell phone connection, right?
Yeah, I think that Brother Services want me to do away with the term Hispanic. It's politically correct, and we're not going to have that here. So them Mexicans grease monkeys down there.
Yeah, Severus has a pony in that race, right? Because he's in Florida somewhere, and he has a long acquaintance with those people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Oh, he's in Florida. He's down there with all the old retired Jewish people, rich Jewish people.
Yeah, and Mexicans and niggers.
And Cubans. It's hot down there now in Florida.
I know if I was a white Spaniard, and I would probably get offended at the term Hispanic, right? Like, look, they're not Spanish. They ain't. Hispania is the original name of Spain, and I would get offended at it. They're not Spanish. It's like calling a Jamaican English, right?
Yeah, I think it's just a term designated to people who speak the Spanish language, per se. I don't know, but yeah, he's right. They're Mexicans.
I've used it sometimes myself, but yeah, it's I could see why somebody that appreciates real Spanish culture might get a little upset.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when you're in Spain and you call a Spaniard a Mexican, they don't like that.
I imagine.
Oh, yeah. They don't like that, they told me. But, you know, it's funny. I was in Spain a couple times, and you find a lot of Mexican restaurants in Spain.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, the true Spanish were, I saw true Spanish, and they were blonde hair and blue eyes.
Well, right.
And I.
There are some left.
I thought that they were Norwegians. So, pardon me?
But there aren't many of them.
Not many of them, but, you know, they're, yeah. I couldn't get over how, you know, they just look like white people. They don't know, yeah. They look like Norwegians.
Yeah.
Oh, they were Norwegians.
I was absolutely amazed.
You'll find a lot of that in Mexico City, too. In southern Mexico, there's a lot of blonde-haired, blue-eyed folks that descend from the Spaniards.
I heard that, yes. I heard
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Severus keeps telling us that, and we keep marveling at the thought, right?
He says, yes, they are white Mexicans.
Somebody's
white Mexican right. Sounds like an oxymoron.
He does, doesn't it? They're down there. All you got to do is look at one of the Mexican TV channels, and you'll see that every one of them is blonde-haired, blue-eyed.
Yeah, you know, that's right.
That's the point. My point is, if you look at their upper class and you look at their shows and all that, those are the people that basically are on their shows. The Indian trips that you see are the ones that are crossing naked over the border, but they've been doing that for thousands of years because they're basically pure Indians.
Yeah.
Now, I've always surmised that a lot of those white girls on Mexican TV must be German immigrants. I mean, I don't know, but that's what I always thought.
Yeah, but most of them, if you look at their last names and their family, they all come from Mexico, like 4 or 5 generations.
Yes, I heard a lot of them are from Argentina and stuff like that, and Spain.
And it's not surprising at all that the ruling class is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed case, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I heard that the Jews are embedded in, they own Spain. The Muranos, that came from, you know, they were kicked out of Spain in 1492. I heard that they overwhelmed Mexico. They just took it over.
Well, you know, that's interesting because I read a tract that was written by Cliff and Emmerhauser at one time where he connected the, Mexicans with the Edomites, essentially, you know, the Canaanite lineage.
Yes.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, and that was talking about the, not the white Mexicans, but these Indian Mexicans.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it had pictures of them and everything, and they looked like squat monsters, and they had the same genes and some of the same diseases that are known with the Jews.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, there was it was interesting because when I read that, I really took an interest in it because I had read an article earlier in Discover magazine. It was called, in the cover, the title of the magazine was Tracing the Y. They were talking about tracing the origins of the Y chromosome, which is essentially, you know, unchangeable from generation to generation. And they had traced the Y chromosome of the Mexican to just east of the Tarim Basin, and they traced the Y chromosome of the Anglo-Saxon Caucasian people to the Tarim Basin itself.
Was it a Jewish scientist?
I honestly don't remember, but I thought it was pretty cool because that's where most identists, at least that I know, believe that the Garden of Eden was just west of the Tarim Basin.
Well, I think that it might be a piece of propaganda designed to attract white Aryan-minded people into thinking that perhaps we're related to Mexicans after all and that they're okay.
No, because they had two separate. They ended up in two separate places.
And I'm extremely cautious about them tracing DNA to anywhere because usually it ignores. Yeah, and I've read a lot of the DNA maps and connections, and it usually ignores a lot of historical evidence about the movement of peoples.
Right. Well, the point was that that both Cain's descendants and Adam's descendants essentially came out of that particular area, and it was ironic to me, whether true or not, whether flawed or not, that the Mexicans, that Clifton Emmerhauser connected the Mexicans to Cain, and that we as Christian identists connect, white man to Adam in the Tarim Basin area.
Yeah, I could see what you mean, but. I think the Mexican-Cain connection comes mostly, at least, through the Murano Jews, right? And the Jews that fled the Inquisition.
Yeah, I heard they were Hamites also. The Havites were part of the Canaanite. That these Havites, that they migrated over to that area also, along with the Israelites that came out of Egypt, one part that went to the sea or whatever that didn't follow Moses. And this was supposed to be the ancient Aztec and Mayan teachings that they came from a great land across from the east.
Well, I wouldn't doubt if a lot of them didn't have their origin in the Phoenicians and the ancient Egyptian mariners, right? And that's a very
exactly.
Yeah, you know, that's a possibility that we have to keep in mind.
That's very true.
Yeah, they said that there were these small hook-nosed brown-skinned people, the Havites. So,
well, the word Hivite. It is, I don't want to get too pedantic here, right? But the word Hivite is actually an error in the King James Bible and in the Masoretic vowel pointing. And if you compare the Resh and the Vav and several of the texts, you'll see that the Hivites, who are unknown to archaeology and history, the Hivites are actually Horites. Wherever it says Hivites, H-I-V, I-T-E in the Masoretic text, it should almost certainly be Horite. We see the word Horite also appear in Genesis.
Right.
And Esau dwelt in Mount Horus, and the Horites are a Canaanite people, that's why the Hurrians don't appear in the Genesis in the creation account. They don't appear listed among the Canaanites, but they appear later in Genesis 10, after Genesis 10, associated with Canaanites. Later in the book of Genesis, right? The Hurrians. Right? But they don't appear in Genesis 10. That's because in Genesis 10, by a scribal error, they are Hivites.
So the Z is not interchangeable with the R in the Hebrew user.
Well, no. If you look at the letter Resh and the letter Vav, they're almost identical.
Okay.
It, in other words, the scribe screwed up, and the readers of the Hebrew saw the Resh as a Vav, because if you compare the Resh and the Vav, they're almost identical, except that the top piece on the Resh is a little longer, right? And Hivite should be Horite, and now the Horites appear in Genesis 10 as a branch of the Canaanites, which is where they belong. And the archaeologists know them as Hurrians.
Mm. Wasn't a Hurrian tribe of Indians in America, the Hurrians?
I don't know. But the Hurrians are the Horites, the Canaanite Horites, that Esau dwelt on Mount Horus and settled among certain Horites on Mount Horus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, which was, so the Canaanites inhabited Petra before Esau got there, right?
Mm-hmm. But they are Canaanite then, type of people.
Yeah.
Because they look at those little Indians down there in Mexico, and they got the hook nose, and their ears are, you know, they got the
Well, they had to come from somewhere, right?
Yeah. They were 50,000 years way before the white man came and took their land. You see,
I think the Tarim Basin thing, I don't think it's accurate. I think that it's a distraction to get the Indo-Aryan homeland away from Mesopotamia. It's my personal opinion that the original location of the flood was, and our race was the Black Sea area, because the word Eden is, it is the Akkadian word for the steppe.
Well, look at the scripture. I don't have my Bible sitting in front of me right now, but
I understand about the four rivers.
No, I'm not even referring to those, even though that is an excellent point that they do exist in that particular region. And there's been a million cases of dispute with whether or not that flood could have actually taken place in that region at that time in the way that it's described in the scripture.
Well, but we can't extrapolate. Well, we don't know geologically what the Black Sea region looked like 7,000 years ago.
Well, we have certain, geographic monuments over there that existed then, and they're still there now. Hello, did I kill myself?
No, you're all right. I'm just a critic of the Tarim Basin, too. And I'm going to stay that way.
Yeah. And also, there was a scripture in there that said that they came into that land from the east. So, my Bible is kitchen. But, I don't know, just it seems plausible to me that the Tarim Basin, you know, was an excellent place for that flood to have happened. I haven't seen any other geographical location there yet that made sense, but, you know, could be. You're right, we don't know for sure.
Yeah, who knows? Now, I know Swift talked a lot about that, and he quoted and said that there was information in Chinese history about this flood that happened.
Well, there's information about floods in Chinese history, right?
So, what's that?
There's information about floods in Chinese history, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the flood.
Right, and then there's, in the Book of Jasher, it talks about two different floods. So I don't know if you're familiar with that. I'm sure you are, Bill. But you know, there's two different floods. There's the flood of Noah, and then there was one previous to that that's mentioned in Jasher. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, you know, I've read Jasher, and a lot of Jasher I don't accept because that I could discuss the problems with the text of Jasher at great length, right? That there's a lot of serious, provable problems with the text of Jasher.
Right, I agree. But like for example, that, you know, Cain and Abel's lineages were almost identical in Jasher as opposed to, you know, King James text where they differ.
Well, right, but there's even more serious problems than that. There's the problem that Jasher puts the Exodus as having happened during the same period of time as the Punic Wars and Caesar's conquest of Britain. And Caesar's conquest of Britain is in the Book of Jasher, and so are the Punic Wars. And the Exodus happened 1,200 years before the Punic Wars. And the Punic Wars happened 200 years before Caesar's conquest of Britain. Or attempted conquest of Britain, I should say. And that also demonstrates that Jasher was written, at least large parts of it, were written after 50 B.C., after 40 B.C.
Right, and that's even if what we're reading as Jasher today is the legitimate, you know?
Well, right, but that's why I don't trust the book, right? Because I know that large parts of it are... I always thought that there was a core of truth in Jasher, but the book was despoiled by later scribes that thought they had to embellish it and add large parts to it.
Right, and that's my mention of the other flood that was in there. I mean, I have, you know, I have the lost books of the Bible, I've got the Apocrypha, I've got...
Yeah, I've read them all. I'm not an expert at them all, but I've read them all at least.
Yeah, I mean, I love reading that stuff. It's just, you know, I have the Dead Sea Scrolls, you know, the two most read books I've got is Mein Kampf and my King James. Even though I've got the Anointed Standard, I've got 10 Bibles, different versions, you know.
Yeah, you got one Bible, don't you, Bill?
Well, you know, I read the Greek in the New Testament, so I really don't. But I use Bible Works for the Old Testament, right? And Bible Works is it gives me several different versions and access to the Hebrew and stuff like that. So
I finally got to look at the version, the Christogenia version that you put out the other day. I finally got to look at that. I'm going to have to order one of those.
The other day. Okay.
Yeah, the very first time that I've ever seen it, and it was Brother Ryan over here in Missouri has a copy of it, and he reads it every day. Of course, I've read Galatians that you wrote because it was put out by on one of Emma Heiser's tracks, but I haven't read the whole version of your translation.
Well, you could get it right offline, right? I mean, it's on my website. You can get all the PDFs right on. You don't have to buy it right away. I mean, download the PDFs. You can download the PDFs for free individually right from my website.
Well,
you just go up to the menu on the upper right-hand side that says
that, that says Christogenia New Testament right under the search, and you go to each document and download the PDF. It's all there for free. It's all online, too, for free. It's searchable and everything. You could read it right on my website.
I thought the New Testament was
$7. No, no, it's $7 if you want the whole PDF in one shot. I don't offer the whole PDF in one shot for free on my website because I can't compete with myself commercially, right? I mean, I may as well cut my wrists.
Bad policy. No, I want the hard, you know, back. I like
right, well, I'm just letting you know, everything I got is for free on my site, right? But yeah, I like to sell books, too.
I can't stand to read digital anything. I like old paper in my hand.
Yeah, you can go somewhere off and read it.
Well, I'm old school like that. I can't stand computers.
Me too.
In spite of all the benefits that they've got, I just, these computers drive me crazy.
Well, I'm starting to work on a new PDF, and I'm going to replace the PDF soon, so it's going to be like edition 1.1, right? And that's to correct some of the errata, some of the errors, the typos and things that I found. And there's a list of those on my website at the bottom of the Christogenia New Testament menu. I'm not perfect, right?
Come on.
Well, there are. There's some errors. There's a couple of verses that were left out. I don't know how, inadvertently. It's just the editing process, right? And there's a lot. The biggest mistakes are a lot of verse numbers are missing. You know, like, if you go through a paragraph, you'll see the verse 1, verse 2, verse 3, verse 5. Well, verse 4 is there, but the number's missing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, none of those numbers are originally anyway, right?
Yeah, right. But I should have had them all in there. I mean,
is that the Bible you're? Is that the Bible you're selling there? The Christogenia Bible? You saying?
Yeah, my New Testament. I mean, it has some errors in it, right? And they've got to be corrected. I'm about to post. Well, I'm not about to. I have the file. I have to format it and to replace the PDF, right?
Oh, right. Okay.
And when I replace the PDF, I mean, I'm hoping to get it done this month, but I got so much on my plate. When I replace the PDF, I'm going to make it available. I'm going to put the ISBN numbers in and things that I need to make it available on Barnes & Nobles and Amazon so I could list it there.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
So I'm hoping to get that done this month. I don't know. And I'm also going to have a Bible Analyzer version real soon. I've already checked most of it. I got to check Paul's letters in the Revelation yet. I'm going to have a Bible Analyzer version so you can download the Bible Analyzer software and add the Christogenia New Testament right to it so that you could have a parallel. The Bible Analyzer thing allows you to have parallel Bibles displayed. Yeah, you know what I mean? So you could see the King James in one column and my translation in another.
Yeah, that was like the other parallel version I used to have. I don't have it anymore. I can't even remember what it's called.
Yeah, well, I'm real close to that. I'm only a couple of nights away from that. I mean, it'll probably be ready, I hope, by Monday or Tuesday.
Are you going to put that in form?
It'll be on my website.
But you're not going to print it up?
Well, no, it's for the software so that you could add it to the, you know, so that you could have the parallel columns on your computer screen. Yeah, that's for Bible Analyzer. That's not going to be printed. That's a piece of software, right?
Yeah, whenever you use those computer terms, all I hear is Charlie Brown's teacher.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry, man. I'm stupid like that. But anyway, sounds interesting.
Hey, well, Bill, I'm gonna check out. So,
okay, Danny, I think Tay is probably falling asleep, and I'm gonna end the program.
Yes,
and
okay, as well.
Alan, you don't have to leave. We could go to the open house when the program ends, right?
So, but great forum tonight. It was good to see everybody here and discussing all the views and fantastic.
Well, thanks for being here and praise Yahweh.
Coming in. Yeah, praise Yahweh, and I'll
Good night.
Good night.